This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Been running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. You know, I'll tell you, I really make an effort here. I really make an effort to talk about different things on different days. I really make an effort, even within the same show, to not be repetitive, to cover a wide variety of subjects. I like the fact that you tune into this show and you don't know what to expect. Are you going to get commentary about aliens or Sid Rosenberg spilling coffee or a personal story or a comment about an assassination conspiracy or whatever, right? I like that it's sort of a free-for-all and you don't know what to expect. But I tell you, I am really taking such issue with society because society is forcing me to do what I feel is the same show every day. Every day I see a different outrage of the day, which essentially boils down to the same subject. And every day that I do this, right, whether it's the war on Columbus Day, whether it's, Spider-Man and Superman being bisexual with one another or any other issue, the issue is always the same. The issue is whatever you want to call it. They used to call it political correctness. These days they call it wokeness. The issue is that wokeness, political correctness, etc., to quote the great Al D'Amato, etc., etc. The issue is wokeness versus history. We have a country that has a very rich history. Is it a perfect history? No. No country does have a perfect history. And yet, we have seen repeatedly over the last couple of decades, but especially the last 2 years, a desire to whitewash and revise history and destroy it and take it down. We are gradually becoming not just the media, not just the government, but society as a whole is gradually becoming the embodiment of what we would see in the days of the Soviet Union. You remember what would happen in the days of the Soviet Union? You'd fall out of favor with the old Soviet Politburo. And then once you fell out of favor, the Politburo would have you erased from those photographs. And I feel like I'm doing the same story every day, but I have to mention this. Thomas Jefferson has a statue in the city council chambers at City Hall. I've been in there literally hundreds of times. It has resided in City Hall, in the council chambers for 187 years. And now, the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, through his public design commission, which, make no mistake, he controls. It is comprised entirely of mayoral appointees. They have listed the long-term loan of the 1833 painted plaster statue of the Declaration of Independence author to the New York Historical Society on its consent agenda for Monday. The consent designation means the statue's removal is not scheduled for public debate. So this 11-member design commission will vote on de Blasio's exile of Thomas Jefferson, our third president, the man responsible for the Louisiana Purchase, the man responsible for the Declaration of Independence, the man who was instrumental in early American diplomacy with France. A man who has done more in one lifetime than most historical figures can do in 10. They're going to vote, these 11 members of the de Blasio Politburo, on removing him from City Hall. And it's a beautiful statue. It is a beautiful work of art. It depicts somebody that is an incredibly popular historical figure and an incredibly important historical figure. Meanwhile, a replica of the statue by sculptor Pierre-Jean David is still on display in the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C. Now, the way this works, the terms of the loan to the Historical Society for the Jefferson, which was gifted to City Hall by naval officer and Jefferson admirer Uriah Phillips Levy in 1834, are still being negotiated. But Councilman Danique Miller, who's been pushing to boot Jefferson, said the loan is indefinite. So they're going to give this Jefferson statue to the New York Historical Society. Why? As an excuse to get it out of City Hall. And this is absolutely outrageous. And I'm forced to agree with my council member, my neighbor, a guy who calls this show occasionally on the 15 seconds of fame as an assumed identity, a guy that loves beating me in ping pong, Councilman Joe Borelli, who told the New York Post today, the de Blasio administration will continue the progressive war on history as he himself fades away into a portrait on a city hall wall. Well said, Joe. Well said, Joe. This is absolutely outrageous. This is apocryphal. Absolutely apocryphal. The contributions of Thomas Jefferson to the world and to this continent are immeasurable. And because he who lived in the 1700s and 1800s no longer would be approved by 21st century standards, we're going to erase him from the city council chambers. Give me a break. This is absolutely outrageous. And a couple of other notes about this statue. You know who hates this statue? Charles Barron. Charles Barron, controversial former Black Panther, was in the city council, then the state assembly. He is being elected to the city council again this year, so he's going to go back there in January. And what Christine Quinn, the former speaker of the city council, used to do when Charles Barron would get out of line, when he'd do something outrageous or inflammatory, she would seat him next to the Thomas Jefferson statue. She moved the statue so that it was next to Barron, or moved Barron so he was next to the statue. So how are you now that Barron is going back to the city council, how do you punish Barron if you can't put him next to Thomas Jefferson? Additionally, there has been one assassination in the city council chambers at City Hall. That was of council member James Davis 18 years ago. I can't believe it. I feel like it was yesterday. 18 years ago, council member James Davis was killed in the city council chambers, assassinated by Othniel Askew. And this madman, Othniel Askew, before he was killed by a brilliant marksman that thankfully was part of Speaker Gifford Miller's security detail, his police escort, nobody knew who Othniel Askew was going to shoot next after he shot James Davis. And it was that statue that several council members hid behind in order to make sure they themselves didn't get shot. So how are those council members going to hide the next time there's an assassin at City Hall? God willing, there never will be one. On a serious note, though, this is, once again, just horrible. And this is the same argument, and that's why I feel like I'm being repetitive when I do these subjects, but I feel like, one, you should know about what's happening in this city, in this state, in this country, and two, I really need some sort of an outlet to vent my outrage about this. Because, look, people can disagree on taxes. People can disagree on the infrastructure bill. People can disagree on abortion or the death penalty or gun rights or zoning laws or whether college tuition should be free. You can disagree on any number of issues. But the fact that Mayor de Blasio and his Design Commission are determined to destroy and erase American history is something that I think should be a nonpartisan issue. Should not matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. Jefferson was the founder, essentially, of the Democratic Party. I mean, there are some turns and curves along the way. It's not a direct founding, but he was the founder of the party that was the predecessor to the Democratic Party. And this move comes after the mayor charged his wife, First Lady Shirlane McRae, with deciding the sculpture's fate as the head of the Commission on Racial Justice and Reconciliation. Somebody's going to have to tell me who elected Shirlane McRae to anything. I don't understand how this woman gets to be in charge of Thrive New York City and did a dismal job with that. So she did such a bad job misappropriating and not accounting for almost $1 billion over 4 years in money that was meant to serve the mentally ill in our city. Let's put her in charge of something else. And of course, you knew the de Blasios were not going to make it out of Gracie Mansion without them taking a shot at Thomas Jefferson along the way. You know, I spoke with one of the mayoral candidates last night. I'm sure you can guess which one. He has assured me that if he's elected, this will not stand. He, I think, is going to go down to City Hall today and do a press conference on this. I want to hear from Eric Adams. I want to hear from Eric Adams. Eric Adams made a big deal a few months ago about renaming all the streets that were named for slaveholders. And he mentioned a few. The two that he didn't mention are Jefferson and Washington. I want to hear Eric Adams say Thomas Jefferson was not a perfect man. Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. Thomas Jefferson had an affair with one of his slaves, which essentially, if you have an affair with somebody that's captive to you, what are you doing? You're raping them. But in spite of Jefferson's flaws, I recognize that Jefferson was a man of his time and was an incredibly important figure in American history. And the fact that we're going to take this statue down is just nuts. Where is Eric Adams? You know, I was looking at there was a New York Times article yesterday and then a segment on New York One last night, all about how Eric Adams has basically disappeared. Now, don't let me get started on the mayor's race, because that's a whole nother can of worms. Now, if you want to comment on this, you want to disagree, you can do so. 800-848-9222. Are you for removing this Jefferson statue? Because apparently, as of Monday, it looks like it's going to be a done deal. 1-800-848-WABC. Because, you know, you have de Blasio, who had hoped to do this quietly. He had hoped to do this on the down low. He had hoped to have his hand-picked design commission quietly vote on Monday. But people have a right to know about this. Hopefully there will be enough of a public outcry to stop this. We've seen that with some other unpopular de Blasio initiatives before. People start screaming, they start shouting, and de Blasio changes his mind. Or he says, well, that was never our plan to begin with. Hopefully, if people make their voice heard on this, not only on the radio, but on social media, in tweets to the mayor, in letters to the mayor, in emails to the mayor, and get a hold of these 11 members, 11 members of the Public Design Commission, hopefully they'll pull the plug on this. And because if we don't, why stop here? Why stop at just removing this statue from the City Hall Council chambers? Why don't we get the mayor and the Public Design Commission and Shirlane McRae? Let's get them all together in front of City Hall in City Hall Park, and we'll have a gathering. We'll have a mass $2 bill burning. Everybody bring down their $2 bills with Jefferson on it. We'll throw them in a big pile and set fire to them the way Bill de Blasio was trying to set fire to history. This is crazy. This is crazy. And let's not stop there. Let's take down that Jefferson statue that's in the rotunda and in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital. Let's not stop there. Let's get Bill de Blasio and Shirlane McRae with a series of drones and a series of bulldozers and a series of ropes and a bunch of dynamite to head down to Mount Rushmore and blow Jefferson's face right off Mount Rushmore. That would be, of course, ridiculous. This is just as ridiculous. Jefferson is a great American. He's a great statesman. He is an American Renaissance man, lawyer, statesman, inventor, architect, writer, thinker. And we're going to take him out of Bill de Blasio's City Hall. Give me a break. Bill de Blasio, who couldn't administer his way out of a paper bag. Bill de Blasio, who was presiding over a city that's in chaos, where the only thing New Yorkers who are at each other's throats, shooting each other on a regular basis, the only thing we could seem to agree upon is that nobody likes Bill de Blasio as mayor. He is going to take Thomas Jefferson out of City Hall. Give me a break. And you know what? If Eric Adams gets elected after saying nothing about this, or heaven forbid, sides with the Public Design Commission and Shirlane McCrae and Bill de Blasio, and he gets elected and the people of New York vote for this, then I don't know what to say to you. I make an effort not to talk too much about politics on this show. If that happens, if you guys elect Eric Adams, if he stays silent or acquiesces to this move to abolish an important part of American history and an important art, important piece of art in City Hall, then I'm just done. I'm doing nothing but pro wrestling, aliens, and Star Trek talk for 4 hours a day. Maybe we'll squeeze in some food talk because I'm done. What's the point? What's the point? I may as well just shout into a pillow somewhere. Because clearly anything I say has no effect. 800-848-WABC. Now, I think we're still having a couple of problems with the phones. So if we cut you off, it's only because there's static on the line. Our engineers may be working on that. Hopefully they can fix that. We'll see. But we'll give it a shot. 800-848-9222. Shirley's in the Bronx. Hello, Shirley.
Hi, Frank. So I just wanted to go very quickly about, I heard some of the callers on Dominic Carter's show, and they were talking about this country and slavery. So I just wanted to say that it's funny because when I hear some of these callers talk about whites owning slaves, I just wonder if they understood that there was a free black man named Anthony Johnson who in 1635, he was an indentured servant. He bought his freedom. He ended up owning his own plantation. He ended up having 250 servants, both white and black. And the story is that he was the first one to actually indoctrinate the
idealism. All right, Shirley, it is an interesting story, but I feel like we're getting off the beaten path with respect to the Jefferson statue issue. I'd prefer to stay focused on the issue of Jefferson statue. 800-848-WABC. Vincent is in Brooklyn. Hello, Vincent.
Good morning, Frank. I feel what Bill de Blasio is doing, he's doing this to deflect attention from the fact that he's a eunuch. He hasn't done anything for the city. As Dominic Carter was talking about, kids are shooting each other left and right. He's not doing anything about that. He's a eunuch. He's got to throw his base a bone. Also, perhaps you didn't realize it or perhaps you forgot to mention it. I believe on Columbus Day in front of the White House, there was a statue that was also vandalized of one of the founding fathers. So this is par for the course with these left.
Right, that was Andrew Jackson, the other founder of the Democratic Party.
The other founder of the country. And first off, how did that person even get on the ground? Because when they showed the picture of the statue on the news, that was pretty close to the White House. How did that person get over there?
Yeah, no, it's a good point, Vincent. Again, I'd prefer to stay focused on the Jefferson issue. If you want to talk about how someone got on the White House grounds or whatever else, you know, call someone else. I'd prefer to stay focused on the issue of this Jefferson statue. 800-848-WABC. John is in Brooklyn. Hello.
You forgot another important criterion, Frank. Thomas Jefferson was one of our great early scientists. He's a father of American paleontology. He was one of the first to look at and describe fossils of mastodons and mammoths.
I think that's a great point, and adds to his resume as an American Renaissance man.
I mean, this is absolutely outrageous. I mean, not only everything else what he did in terms of writing the Declaration of Independence, founding the University of Virginia, et cetera, serving us ably as one of our first ambassadors to France. You know, this is incredible.
It is. It's outrageous in my view, John. John, thank you for the call. And you know what I'll say? Jefferson, New York played a pretty important role in Jefferson's life, just as Jefferson played an important role in the history of New York. Now, you remember what happened, you know, and a lot of you know history. You don't need me to teach you it. But you remember what happened in the election of 1800, right? So the election of 1800, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version in case you don't remember it. But you had you had the Federalists and the Democratic Republicans. The Federalists nominated John Adams and C.C. Pinckney as their candidates for president and vice president. The Democratic Republicans nominated Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr. Now, when the founders put together the Constitution, they did not envision the founding of political parties. They shockingly thought that the people in the Electoral College would cast a vote for the best qualified person to be president. So they had the rule that if whoever gets the most votes is president, whoever gets the second most votes is vice president. Now, that works all well and good until you insert political parties into the mix. What happens when you insert political parties? Well, all the electors that were pledged to Jefferson and all that were pledged to the Democratic Republican ticket, they voted for Jefferson and Burr because there was no provision before the 12th Amendment. There was no provision for casting a separate ballot for president and vice president. So what happens? Jefferson and Burr end up tied. What happens when there's a tie in the Electoral College? Well, unlike baseball, the tie does not go to the runner. Tie goes to the House of Representatives. And then the way the House votes is they vote not one congressman, one vote. They vote by state. New Jersey casts one vote. Connecticut casts one vote. Delaware casts one vote, etc. Again, to paraphrase Al D'Amato, etc., etc. So New York, they couldn't come up with a result. And ultimately, it was up to New York. New York was the tie-breaking vote. And New York, remember, had a key. Aaron Burr was from New York. And another key Federalist, another key Federalist leader, Alexander Hamilton, was from New York. And it was the old Congress that got to vote on who the new president would be. So all of these Federalist Congress members who are all about to be thrown out of office, they have to pick who the new president is. Now, they can't stand Jefferson and they can't stand Aaron Burr. So what do you do? Those are the two choices. So Alexander Hamilton, the publisher of the New York Post, former Secretary of the Treasury, a very prominent New York Federalist, he goes to the New York congressional delegation. And even though he had fought bitterly from the time of Washington's administration onward with Jefferson, he says to the New York delegation, do the right thing, vote for Jefferson. Because even though he couldn't stand Jefferson's politics and Jefferson's ideology, Hamilton understood that Aaron Burr was a scoundrel and that Jefferson, while he didn't agree with him, had some character. So that's what New York did. Following Hamilton's direction, they voted for Jefferson, and Jefferson was elected president. And in becoming president, presided over the Louisiana Purchase, where we tripled the size of this country overnight for 6 cents an acre. Think of how different history would have been had New York made the wrong choice. And yet, we're going to take a crucial piece of that historical marriage of Jefferson and New York out of City Hall. Doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it makes sense to you. 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. 77 WABC.
Tell all the folks to Thank you, Matt, for playing the OJs to calm me down. A terrific song, Love Train. That is, obviously, it's been a great song for a few decades now, but this is a great film. I'm a great lover of the films of Whit Stillman. If you're a film liker or lover, and you have not experienced the films of Whit Stillman, you are shortchanging yourself. Whit Stillman is the Wasp's answer to Woody Allen, and he made a terrific film. I liked it. Called The Last Days of Disco. And it's funny, I always hate to leave my wife when she's still awake and drive into work. You know, I prefer to always be home with her. But one of the times that I was particularly sad to leave my wife was about 6 or 7 months ago when my brother Nicholas was staying over at our house, and they put on the film, at my recommendation, The Last Days of Disco. And it was about a third of the way into it, and I had to leave for work, and they kept watching it. I was so envious because I love the film and would love to watch it again. But to experience it with someone who's never seen it before is an extra special treat. So I was sorry that I didn't get to stick around that particular evening. But if you like the OJs, if you like music of the 70s, if you like the films of Whit Stillman, do yourself a favor and check out The Last Days of Disco. Is it a perfect film? No. But it's as imperfect as Jefferson was. 800-848-WABC, talking about the decision that's expected to come on Monday to remove Thomas Jefferson's statue from City Hall. And I am pretty ticked off about it. I've said enough. I will let you guys be heard. And 800-848-9222. Susan is in Brooklyn. Hello, Susan.
Oh, my goodness. I am just absolutely floored at what you're discussed about the shooting of James Davis in City Hall, and that they Charles Barron and I assume others took refuge behind.
Well, Barron himself, I don't think did, but I know Councilmember Mike McMahon, who's now a DA, I know he did, and others. Barron, I was mentioning with respect to the Jefferson statue, was punished by Christine Quinn by having to sit next to him because he hates Jefferson.
Okay. Well, this is also, well, I just wanted to, like, revisit this. I was pretty active in grassroots politics back in those days, and so that's, but you know, obviously it's a couple decades ago. So isn't that what propelled Letitia James on the Working Families Party?
You have an excellent
special election.
Yes, it wasn't a special, but you have an excellent memory, Susan. What happened was James Davis, a council member from Brooklyn, was on the Democrat and Independence and Working Families Party's lines, and he was shot. And then what happened was when a candidate dies, even if it's late in the election cycle, you get to replace that candidate and put another candidate on. So the Democrats and the Independence Party chose to put on Jeffrey Davis, James Davis's brother, and the Working Families Party chose to put on their line Letitia James. And you're right, Letitia James got elected solely as the candidate of the Working Families Party. It was very remarkable. She got elected as a third-party candidate because there was a lot of controversy in that election. But yes, she got elected as a third-party candidate initially. Very few New Yorkers remember that. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Ron is in Alabama. Hello, Ron.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Got to keep it short within a minute or so. When the Declaration of Independence was written, and we were to separate ourselves from Britain. In 1808, it was to go into effect, and Section 9 of Chapter 1 of our Constitution in 1808. Now, John Adams defended Armistead.
John Quincy Adams.
Yes, sir. And successfully, with notes from
So what's the point here, Ron? I know in the South they take things nice and slow. Where are we going? Where are we going, Ron?
Okay. They were all freed because our Constitution said no more shipping of slaves as of 1808.
Right. Again, I'm not clear, Ron, on what this has to do with the statue, and it's only a four-hour show. I don't care to put in the effort to find out what it has to do with the statue, but I am very familiar with the Amistad case and a great film about the Amistad case by Steven Spielberg with Anthony Hopkins as John Quincy Adams. Matthew McConaughey is in that as well. A great cast. I can't recommend it enough. Morgan Freeman is in it as well. Amistad, it's great. And I definitely recommend that film as well. 800-848-9222. Al is in Rockland County. Hello, Al.
Hi, how are you doing? I wanted to say that people forget that one of the prime things he did in his later life was in terms of architecture and art and urban planning. You know, before Washington, D.C. was laid out in a nice grid, most cities were just rambling pieces like the lower part of Manhattan was. And then that's where this whole sense of having an organized urban plan came from, that it was Jefferson who actually went to France and brought a lot of the ideas back from what he saw in Paris and other places in Europe. And he brought a huge number of books back with him as well. And those books became the foundation of the library for both the University of Virginia, which he not only just financially helped create, but he actually designed and gave a whole new way of having a spacious, beautiful campus. And he also, his other books went to the National Museum, not the museum, the Library of Congress. And that became a place where a lot of people became first exposed to all these books of architecture.
So it's safe to say, Al, you're with me on keeping the statue there.
My God, it's a statue to begin with. It's a piece of art, and it's a role.
I'll take that as a yes. Thank you, Al. 800-848-WABC. Jed is in Canada. Hello, Jed.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thank you for asking.
You got a great show.
Thank you.
I'll tell you, what's going on in America is killing me. I can't believe it. They used to go overseas to fight tyranny. Now they won't even walk across the street to fight. This is tyrannical, what's going on. Taking statues down and all this nonsense and dribble. It's crazy. How does that help anybody?
I don't think it does, as far as I'm concerned, Jed. I don't think it does at all. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Drew in White Plains. Drew, are you going to not let anybody talk like you did with Dominic at the end of his show?
Listen, I apologize. And you know what? Dominic, he made a lot of good points. But the thing is, the only reason why we brought it up was because he had praised Mayor Giuliani. Now, I don't feel like arguing about Mayor Giuliani, but what I can tell you is he had a serious disconnect with the African-American community. That's not news. That's not anything.
All right, so don't vote for him.
No, I mean, okay, granted. But, you know, that wasn't the media. For me, you know, and for my community, I came up in Harlem. We looked at his 8 years as a reign of terror.
All right. Well, it's over. It's over. You've had 20 years to get over it. Can we get on with it?
I know, but when he brought it up today, I was very passionate about my opposition to him. Because he actually brought it up. He said that's why he liked when he was in office. So that was what sparked the argument today. Like I said, I respect Dominic and his opinion. I just was very passionate on that topic because I had a whole different
perspective. All right, do you have anything you want to add on Thomas Jefferson?
Absolutely. I wanted to say that, you know, with all this stuff, Frank, it needs to be a conversation because de Blasio, I don't even think he really cares to move Thomas Jefferson's statue, but this is the hardcore truth. The people that put him in office want that statue gone. When I first heard about the statue, I Googled something. I said Al Sharpton, Thomas Jefferson statue. In 2017, Al Sharpton was asking for that statue to be removed. Now, I don't know if de Blasio has plans on running for governor or whatever. I just know he feels like he's playing to his base. So I feel like everybody's at each other's throat about you know, this thing's a racist. Let's cancel Columbus Day. On Monday on Columbus Day, I realized no Democrat besides Tom Suozzi even really acknowledged Columbus
Day. Well, I mean, that's not true. I was at the parade. There were many Democrats there.
I'm talking about the mainstream ones.
Well, like, I mean, Bill de Blasio was there. Tom DiNapoli okay. was there. You saw State Senator Diane Savino. You saw, as you mentioned, Congressman Tom Suozzi. I think even Governor Hochul was there.
Okay, well, I met somebody like Chuck Schumer, Eric Adams. And it's
yeah, just, Adams was definitely not there. That's true.
Chuck Schumer. And I even looked on Chuck Schumer's Instagram. He didn't even acknowledge Columbus Day. The thing is, people feel like they have to do something to appease the people who are voting for them.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're the silence from Schumer on the Columbus issue and de Blasio's move here, coupled with what he did with Gifted and Talented last Friday, is all tied into the same thing, which is, and I think you're very perceptive to point this out, the concerns about the statewide Democratic primary base next year. Because you have Schumer, who's worried about his left flank. He would, to use my friend Curtis Lewa's terms, if AOC were to announce that she's running for U.S. Senate against Schumer, he would have an X-lax attack. And the same thing with Bill de Blasio. De Blasio and Schumer have to appeal to the same base in next year's Democratic primary. So I think that's what a lot of this is about. And if that's the case, that's a shame. But I'll tell you what. I consider myself pretty liberal. You know, you go down issue after issue, I'm to the left on many of them. But, and I have many friends that are super left-wing, super progressive. I don't remember hearing any left-wing, progressive, Democrat, liberal, whatever phrase you want to use. I don't remember any left-wing friend of mine saying, you know, I'm really bothered by that Thomas Jefferson statue. You know, I mean, I've heard you're bothered by Donald Trump. You're bothered by the Supreme Court, bothered by, you know, this or that. But I've never heard anybody say, oh, New York would be such a better place if we would just get that Jefferson statue out of City Hall. No, it's ridiculous. 800-848-WABC. Louise is in New Jersey. Hello.
Hi, Louise. Thank you, Frank, for defending Thomas Jefferson. I'm with you 150%. He did so many wonderful things, like you say, buying a Louisiana Purchase, writing the Declaration of Independence. People don't know this because they don't know, I don't think, too much about Sally Hemings, who was his mistress, but it was his wife's half-sister. And
Wait, Sally Hemings was Martha Jefferson's wife's half-sister?
Sally Hemings was a half-sister to Jefferson's wife, Martha, yes.
Is that true? If that's true, I did not know that.
Yeah, I have this old book about Sally Hemings, probably 30 years old, and I couldn't remember the author right now, but it mentioned that, okay? And he took...
Well, yeah, actually, it does look like you're right about that. I had no idea that was the case. Wow. They had the same father, John Wales. Wow.
Right, and he educated her brother to be a chef over in Paris. And on, he freed, they had seven children. He freed those children as they got to adulthood, okay? And he didn't free her, but he freed the rest of the children. I remember years ago, there was a TV show with Bud Collier on the TV, and they had, who was Thomas Jefferson? Who was Thomas Jefferson? They had three guys dressed up like Thomas Jefferson. And I looked at this one. I had just read this book about Thomas Jefferson. I go, that guy in the middle got to be Thomas Jefferson's relative because he looked so exactly like him. And it turned out he was. And one of those children he had by Sally Hemings had moved to, I think, Ohio.
Wow. Yeah, he had descendants that lived in New York and in Staten Island until recently, actually. Thank you for that history lesson, Louise. See, even I learned something by listening to this show. You never know what you're going to learn by listening to this show. See, thanks to callers like Louise, I am a better educated, more well-rounded person. All right. Now, let me give you a dime's worth of free advice. If you want more energy, If you want a healthier digestive tract, if you want to be regular instead of being constipated, you need to try Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a phenomenal product that I've tried, and I love. I drink it every day. I drank two big glasses last night. It's called Life Change Tea because it is life-changing. It's a tea specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula. Tastes great. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox. All the garbage that we put into our body on a daily basis, well, Life Change Tea plays a pretty significant role in getting all of that out of your system and keeping you regular. That's why they call it the tea that makes you go. Give it a try. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you order some or anything else on that website and you use the promo code Frank when you order, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in the United States. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
WABC. You're hearing things.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Yeah, touch it.
Wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Hold a throne. Give us the nice bright colors. Give us the greens of summers. Makes you think all.
Ah, yes, Paul Simon saying, don't take my Kodachrome away. Find somebody these days that even knows what Kodachrome is. That is a difficult thing to do. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Got an action-packed show for you coming up at 3:30. We are going to talk with we're going to do the AC report. We're going to talk with Chuck Darrow. And coming up at 4:30 after the $1,000 minute, we're going to talk with Karen Turk about abusive guardianships. She's got a new book out. I'm very much looking forward to talking with her about that. And we'll take your calls on a wide variety of subjects. You want to find me on Twitter, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank Morano. Or you could find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan, facebook.com/MoranoFan. You can always email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. And if you have any interesting emails, be they positive or negative, we will maybe include them in the next mail segment we do. That's M-A-I-L, not M-A-L-E. So if you're quirky, if you're witty, send me an email or send me a letter. And we'll be happy to read your comments on the air. Now, I was asleep, sound asleep as I am most mornings. And I was hurriedly roused by my wife at approximately 10:30 yesterday morning. And she woke me in a panic. And she was genuinely panicked. Now, my wife, you know, is a pretty calm person. She's a type A personality, but on the whole, she's pretty calm. She doesn't get worked up, I'll say. She doesn't get flustered, I'll say. Even when there are stressful moments in her life, she doesn't get flustered. So she had a look on her face and was moving so quickly that I immediately thought, and I mean, I'm half asleep at the time that she's waking me up. I immediately thought that someone died. Someone close, because like one of my parents or her mother, and She wakes me up, and she looks like a mad woman when she wakes me up. She says, I'm sorry to wake you. She kind of gets that out of the way. Now, she says, Bathsheba is missing. Bathsheba is not in the house. I don't know where she is. I need your help. Now, Bathsheba, if you're new to the show, is her favorite cat. Probably my favorite cat, too. She's the friendliest of the three cats that live with us. She's a black cat who would be as friendly as can be to a stranger or anybody else. She's a very, very nice cat, a very kind girl. You could take her to the veterinarian, no problem. The couple of times that we've moved, she goes into her cat carrier, no problem. She's just wonderfully behaved. She's delightful. Whereas Melchizedek, her adoptive brother, will only allow his mother and me to pet him. Their other adopted sister, Prissy, will only allow Rachel to pet her. That's it. Won't even allow me near her. If I cough or clear my throat, she leaves the room. She's terrified of everybody. She gets along with other cats, namely the two that she lives with, but she doesn't get along with people at all. She just hides whenever people come over. So she tells me that Bathsheba is missing. So I throw on my bathrobe. I run downstairs because my wife is just, she's now moving so fast. She's shouting, hurriedly shouting instructions to me and updates to me as we're sprinting down the stairs. And she says, I already put out something on Facebook, but I need your help. And I go to her office, and I'm still trying to wake up here. I'm still trying to – I mean, keep in mind, I'm woken from my soundest sleep. It's REM sleep. And I go to her office, and there's a bunch of thoughts going into my mind. She's printed out about 20 flyers, color flyers, all saying missing cat. It's got a picture of Bathsheba. It's got Bathsheba's name. And then in big, big letters, it's saying cash reward. And then it's got the dollar signs. Big money reward. And then it says where she disappeared from, who to contact. I mean, you could tell. Like, she sprung into action on this. And now all I'm thinking, I have a few thoughts running through my mind at this point. One is, how much money are we giving away as an award? Because I don't know that we should be awarding somebody that does the right thing and bring our cat back, but okay. You know, I know this is an important member of our family. You want to give an award, okay. And because my attitude with these cats has always been, cats, you want to leave? You think you have it better off somewhere else? God bless you. There's the door. You know where to go. And you have it pretty good here. We're keeping you in cat food. You got treats. You got all sorts of toys. You got two scratch lounges. You got a choice of litter box. You got backyard privileges. You think you have it better off somewhere else? Good luck to you. Go ahead. Rachel views it differently. So the next thing, after I'm trying to contemplate how much money we're giving away to the person that awards us, the next thing I'm thinking is, oh, my goodness, I hope I didn't let this cat out when I came home or when I went to bed last night, and that's why she escaped, because then I would just assume that we're going to be divorced. I mean that would be it. For you have a better chance of my wife forgiving me for infidelity and losing the mortgage money in a poker game than you do of her forgiving me for causing one of her cats to disappear. So I say, and I'm trying to act cool, like I have nothing to do with this, because I don't think I do. So I say to Rachel, I said, okay, when was the last time you saw her? She says, 8:30 this morning. And I just say, whew, because I was asleep. That means she let her out at 8:30, not me. Okay. So where did you see her? I saw her in the backyard. Rachel says, I searched all over the backyard, and then I drove all over the neighborhood. I went into Sam and Maria's backyard. I drove around. I went into the lady's backyard behind us. I went this way. I looked all over. I can't find her. I'm going to put up these flyers. I said, okay, all right. I'm still trying to process all this here. And I'm also hoping that we can solve this quickly, this mystery, so that we can find the cat and return her home safely so that I can go back to sleep. So I said, all right, well, I know Rachel said she searched every crevice of our backyard. Now, our backyard is fenced in. We have fences in the backyard. And the primary reason that we have fences is so that the cats can go back there. And Only two go back there, but Bathsheba's the only one that really likes going back there. She, you know, she has the run of the backyard. She hangs out under the barbecue grill. Melchizedek will go back there, but he won't step on the grass. This big, tough cat that loves scratching people, that loves defecating in the litter box and not covering his poop to show his dominance over his siblings. He does not like to step on the grass. He's afraid of the grass. He's also afraid of the thunder. He hides under the couch when there's thunder. He's a coward. He's kind of your typical bully. He's all big and tough until there's grass or thunder. So anyway, Bathsheba's the one that goes back there, and it's usually pretty safe because, you know, she likes the fence. She'll stay out there all day. So I said, all right, let me go in the backyard and take a look. So I go back there, and sure enough, I see Bathsheba sitting right under the table that we have in the back. I don't know what you call it. It's like a table. It's a table that you'd, it's an outdoor table, right? Outdoor patio table. And she's sitting right there in her usual spot. And I said, honey, she's right here. Now, the flesh could not have moved as fast as Rachel moved when I said those words as she sprinted from her office to the backyard. She said, where? I said, she's right on the table. And I open the screen door and Rachel comes, Bathsheba comes strolling right in. Now, I think I'm going to be a big hero at this point because I found the cat. But Rachel she grabs the cat and she's hugging her and kissing her. And just overcome with emotion, she's like basically crying happy tears to be reunited with this cat. But at the same time, she's yelling at her and reprimanding her for leaving the backyard. So she's calling her a brat and she's kissing her and hugging her. She says, you're never allowed outside again. You're punished. And sure enough, she didn't get let outside again for the rest of the day. She was indeed punished. She sat the whole day meowing by that back sliding door that leads to the backyard. And my wife would not let her out because of what happened. So I didn't get any accolades for being the hero that I thought I was going to be in finding the cat. But the good thing was I got to go back to sleep. And we didn't have to diminish our household wealth by paying a reward to somebody. So the theory, Rachel showed me the gap in the fence that she thinks Bathsheba got out from. And she thinks she was spooked by the neighbor's landscaper or something. And she's going to put in another guardrail or something to seal that section off so that Bathsheba can't escape. But that was today's drama. Is Bathsheba's attempted escape from Staten Island. But again, my attitude is always, you think you have it better out there? Good luck to you. You want to come back? We'll be happy to have you. But, you know, you had it pretty good here. You don't need to be running away. And sure enough, she came back. She realized that what I just said was very true words. But it's funny. I thought I was going to have a full day of just an ecstatic and grateful wife. And then sure enough, the third time my wife asked me to take out the recycling before I left last night, she made her displeasure over the fact that she needed to ask me three times known. And I said, honey, you know, I thought I was going to be a big hero today. One, finding the cat. And two, my friends, who are close friends of mine, they're in the neighborhood. They invited me to go have seafood and drinks with them. And I said, no, my wife's cooking. I'm going to stay home with Rachel. And I thought I was going to be a big hero for both reasons. And she kind of giggled and rolled her eyes. And it was clear that I was not going to be a hero for finding the cat. She said, all you did was walk back there and look. I said, yeah, but I'm the guy that did it. You know, it's funny. Somebody emailed me when we did our Columbus show on Monday. And because I made a whole big thing about how different the world would be if Columbus had never existed. And this person emailed me and said, well, somebody else would have found it and everything would be exactly the same. But my reaction to that was, but nobody did. Columbus did. And I'm the one that found the cat in the backyard. So that was today's drama. William Shatner going into space. Now, that was exciting. We'll bring you highlights of that coming up in just a minute. Still to come, the AC report and a bunch of other things. And we're also going to talk with Karen Turk about her new book and about abusive guardianships. It's not just Britney Spears and old people anymore. There's a lot of people stuck in these abusive guardianships, and we're going to go over it with Karen Turk as we talk with her about her new book, Behind the Headlines. If you want to find me on Twitter, just go to at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And if you're on Facebook, please be sure to join our Facebook group. Just search Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. Until next hour, in the words of the great Bob Barker, make sure you help control the pet population and have your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
You know, it's funny. I just got an email from the person I hope is the next First Lady of New York City, Nancy Sliwa. She's actually running for city council in Manhattan as well against Gail Brewer. She said, "You nailed it on the show. Infidelity you could possibly work past. A missing cat, not so sure." She and Curtis, of course, live with about 16 cats in their home, maybe 17. I've lost count, but it's nice to know Nancy is listening. Hey, yesterday was a banner day for the history of the world. William Shatner, a man who has had a legendary career as a thespian, a writer, a director, a voiceover artist, a singer, a celebrity spokesman, a man who has done everything, really finally did everything. William Shatner, who I have personal fondness for, I started life as a Star Trek fan and would watch other things that William Shatner would do. So I'd see him in T.J. Hooker and I'd read the Tech War books. But really now, my fandom of William Shatner is more than my fandom of Star Trek, because his portrayal of, say, Denny Crane in Boston Legal is remarkable. His portrayal of Bill, which is a fictionalized version of himself, in the movie Free Enterprise, remarkable. So I was very pleased when it was announced that he was going to become the oldest person in history ever to go to space at 90 years old. And I watched the blast off, and it was terrific. It was great. And that ship that they're on, that Blue Origin ship, really does look like a giant phallic symbol. And that's why Shatner's joke about that was very apropos. But I think that Shatner, it's so appropriate that he, someone that inspired so many to be interested in space and somebody that inspired so many people to want to explore space, really did put his tippy toe into the next chapter of exploring that final frontier. So then after this flight, which was just about 11 minutes, he comes back down to Earth. He's greeted by Jeff Bezos and the rest of the Blue Origin crew. And this is the clip of them celebrating and Shatner's talk to Jeff Bezos. And I thought about editing it and only playing portions of it. But I think that that it really makes sense to play the whole thing, because I think it was very I thought it was very, very kind.
This comforter of blue that we have around us, we think, oh, it's blue sky. And then suddenly you shoot through it all of a sudden, as though you whip off a sheet off you when you're asleep, and you're looking into blackness, into black ugliness. And you look down, and there's the blue down there, and the black up there, and it's It's just there is Mother and Earth and comfort, and there is there death? I don't know. Is that death? Is that the way death is? Whoop, and it's gone. Jeez. It was so moving to me. This experience did something unbelievable. You see, yeah, you know, the weightless, my stomach went up, and I thought, God, this is so weird. But not as weird as the covering of blue. This is what I never expected. Oh, it's one thing to say, oh, the sky and the thing and the fragile thing. It's all true. But what isn't true, what is unknown, I'll tell you to do it, is this pillow. There's this soft blue. Look at the beauty of that color. And it's so thin. And you're through it in an instant. It's what a... How thick is it? We know.
I mean, the atmosphere.
Is it a mile? Two miles?
I mean, depends on how you measure, because it thins out, but maybe 50 miles.
But you're going 2,000 miles an hour. So you're through 50 miles at whatever the mathematics
fast.
Are.
Fast. Yeah. Really,
you know,
fast.
It's like a beat and a beat, and suddenly you're through the blue.
And
you're into black. Mm-hmm. And you're into, you know, it's mysterious and galaxies and things. But what you see is black. And what you see down there is light, and that's the difference. And not to have this, you have done something. I mean, whatever those other guys are doing, what isn't, they don't, I don't know about that. What you have given me is the most profound experience I do have. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary, extraordinary.
And then Bezos hugs him as Shatner's clearly very emotional as he says there, what you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. Well, I think this is a banner day in the history of not only William Shatner's life, but in the history of human civilization. The fact that we could be sending 90-year-olds to space, even if it's only for 11 minutes, that's a pretty cool thing. And Shatner tweeted... During the, I'm sure this was a tweet that somebody else ended up sending out, but this was a tweet that went out while he was up there in those 11 minutes. He sent out a tweet quoting Isaac Newton, and this is what he said. And I think whether it was him who selected this or somebody else, he said, "I do not know what I may appear to the world, but to myself, I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore, diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me." Well said, and such an apropos quote to choose. 800-848-WABC. My question for you is, well, I have two questions, actually. I got a text message from my friend Mario DeRay yesterday, and right after this happened. And he said, from commanding a Federation starship to being cargo on a billionaire's toy rocket, oh, how the mighty have fallen. I said, oh, will you stop? This is so cool. And then Mario says, I agree. It was cool. I just wish all this was happening 50 years ago. NASA provided proof concept with the space program in the 60s. After that, the private sector should have been encouraged to pick up the ball and run with it. I completely agree with that. I wish Bezos and Elon Musk and Richard Branson are doing now, I do wish we saw the private sector play a bigger role 50 years ago after the Apollo missions. But here we are, better now than never. Am I right? 800-848-WABC. I'd also like to know if you would go on, if you had the opportunity, putting the issue of cost aside. Let's say you got to go for free like Shatner did. I'd love to know if you would go to space on a Blue Origin flight, or if you prefer the Richard Branson model or Elon Musk and SpaceX, whatever situation. But would you go on one of these space flights? Because two of the people in this four-person crew were paying customers. And that is what these people are banking on in the future. They are banking that people are going to want to pay thousands of dollars, many thousands of dollars right now, but hopefully it'll get cheaper in the future, to go on these space flights. My answer is 100% absolutely would I want to go on one of these space flights if I could afford it. And I'd be curious how many people in our audience would view things the same way. Would you want to go? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I think this is super, honestly. I'm hoping that we get to see some sort of a documentary about Shatner's experiences there, or he'll write a book in which he talks about this whole thing. I've read most of Shatner's books, and the way he tells a story is like no other, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing more of his perspective in terms of going into, as you heard him there, black nothingness. Just to talk about putting aside the issue of the space program for a second, my fondness for William Shatner is almost infinite. Other than my own father, Shatner to me is the personification of everything a man should be. When I think, what should I be like as a human being? I think of William Shatner. And not only all the great characters he's played, Captain Kirk, T.J. Hooker, Denny Crane, Bill, a number of others, but just him as a personality, he's just extraordinary, just extraordinary. And I wish I got to interview Shatner more than one time, but I interviewed him once or twice, and then I produced another couple of interviews that my friend Joe Piscopo did with him. And he's always incredibly kind and very nice. And I'll never forget, he had been told what a big fan I was of him. And so he got on the phone with me one time. And he just starts, greets me like we're old friends who've known one another for 20 years.
Frank, Bill Shatner, how are you?
Now, I mean, that was such a thrill for me to have him, just greet me as if, you know, we just went to the market together.
Frank, Bill Shatner, how are you?
I thought that was so neat. So then I give, you know, as you've heard when I interview guests, I give a pretty lofty introduction. In the case of Shatner, almost the entire interview was my introduction of him because he had so many accolades and accomplishments that I felt a need to try and mention. And this was Shatner's reaction to my introduction of him.
Well, it's the pleasure is mine, and wow, what an introduction! Do you mind if I tape that and use it to start everything I do in the morning?
So that was pretty cool that he was so taken with that introduction that he would do that. But I am hoping, the rumor was that he wanted to be in the next Star Trek film, and I don't know that that's going to happen. But it really would be neat to see him play Captain Kirk again one more time. We'll see. Because if you look at his portrayal of Kirk, especially in the Star Trek movies, he is just, I mean, he's an amazing actor. And an amazing, he does amazing things with his voice. I mean, you remember Star Trek II? 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Joan in the East Village. Hello, Joan.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is not about Star Trek. This is about Star Reality. But it is interesting about William Shatner. I wonder, I didn't see the picture. Was he wearing his little Star Trek outfit with the swoosh?
No, he wore the Blue Origin flight suit that all the other passengers wore.
Like a jumpsuit? I've never seen that, actually. Is that like a jumpsuit?
That's similar, yes, similar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I was wondering, you had Steve Case on yesterday, and I was, so is that a regular feature now? Every Wednesday morning?
Well, I mean, not necessarily every week, but whenever there's something space-related to cover, I try to, you know, convince Steve Case to stay up late and chat with us.
Okay, because he mentioned, or I think you mentioned SETI, right? The search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And I think you have had the head of SETI on before, Seth Shostak.
That's correct, yes.
Right. Are you planning to have him on again?
Probably.
Full of fascinating stuff.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good. I just wanted to...
Would you go to space, Joan, if you could go for free?
No.
No? How come?
Because I'm afraid.
All right, okay, all right.
I have my land legs, which barely carry me around. I have no desire to go up there.
All right, well, fair...
Isn't there some kind controversy about this 52-mile thing where you're not quite in outer space. What is the 52-mile?
Well, we talked about this yesterday, right? To me, and thanks for the call, Joan, once you leave the atmosphere, you're in space. Once you travel, I think it's 375,000 feet above the ground. Once you no longer see blue sky and you see black and it's zero gravity and you're floating around in zero gravity and you look out and you don't see blue sky, you see black, that's space. Okay. I don't care whether it's the edge of space or the middle of space. That's outer space. It is. I'm sorry. That's when you think of space, what do you think of? You think of not being able to breathe. You think of it being black. You think of floating around in zero gravity. And where Shatner was, space. 800-848-WABC. Joe in the Queens, would you go to space?
No, and I'll give you two reasons. One would be I think the air pressure would be, very uncomfortable. So I would do like an earthly adventure, like I'd do a day hike on the Serengeti if you drop me off with a couple of people there. There's enough to do on Earth, and, I wouldn't want to deal with, the change in air pressure. That would be one. The second reason would be, even if I was okay with that, I still wouldn't be one of the first people to do it.
Well, now you've had a few different ships go.
Yeah, but you're still the very first.
Yeah, I know that. To me, and I hear what you're saying, Joe, and thanks for the call, that's part of what's so cool about it. Is that so few other people have done it. It's funny. I was in a meeting with Donald Trump and about a dozen other New York political people. This is December of 2013. And this group of people, including me, was trying to convince him to run for governor of New York. And Trump made clear he didn't want to run for governor. He made clear that he wanted to run for president. And then we go around the table and everybody gives their thoughts to Trump about, the race and how it would go and whether he should run for governor or not. And this one assembly member, Assemblyman Nojay, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, passed away kind of tragically. He said to Trump, Mr. Trump, you can still run for president. Just run for governor now. Get elected governor, and you can run as governor for president. Because nobody in history, this is Nojay speaking, not me, so put aside the accuracy of what he said, nobody in history has run for president without first being a governor, a senator, a vice president, or a general. So, that's what Nojay said. So he tells Trump that, and Trump immediately responds, without missing a beat, he just says, but that's what's so cool about it. And he's exactly right. To me, the fact that not a lot of people have been to space, that's what's so cool about it. 800-848-9222. Would you go to space? Let me say hello to Doris in the Bronx. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
My biggest dream is to go into space. I am an alien grandma. I made believe I talked to the aliens. I used to look out the window, put my hand on my kid's head, and go, hey, yeah, 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 yeah. And sometimes I used to cry.
Why would you cry?
Yes. The kids used to cry.
Oh, the kids cried. Oh, got it.
I roll my eyes up and make.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's cool.
The aliens. And one time I took all four of my grandchildren out in their pajamas. And we took big guns, and we went space hunting. And I saw shooting, maybe we were seeing shooting stars, maybe there. And they had this boathouse in the back that had all these, there's something that controlled the water, that lights and stuff. I said, when those lights turn green, that means that they're coming. And the lights started changing. Of course, nothing to do with that. And so this, oh, Grandma, look. I said, yes, hurry, let's. Hold your guns. Let's get back to the house quick.
That's fun. You sound like a fun grandmother, Doris.
Oh my God.
Hopefully I'll see you on a future.
My whole life.
Hopefully I'll see you on a future discount space trip, Doris. 800-848-9222. Paul is in the Bronx. Paul, would you go to space?
Yeah, but I think the only drawback, if you get stuck on a rocket ship with some dude that wants to see Uranus.
I'm just thrilled that we didn't hear about Jeanine Pirro or James O'Keefe. Larry in Brooklyn, hello.
Yeah, hi, Frank. I'm sorry, you can refer to me from now on as the Grinch that stole outer space. But to me, this thing is all a bunch of hype and hooey.
Well, I mean, of course it is. I mean, that's why they got a celebrity to go on this flight, because they knew it would mean more publicity.
Right. Now, I'll tell you, William Shatner was very dramatic, but I could probably experience the same thing he did if I went on a cruise and I went out on the deck at night and looked out into the ocean. All I would see is black also, and I could probably describe it in the exact same way.
Well, I'm up for that challenge, Larry. If you want to try that and call us back and report to us, we'd love to hear it. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Practice. There's so much wrong with this. I'm surprised. I know you believe in climate change. I don't. I think climate change is nonsense. But I know you've said publicly that you believe in it. So now we have, number one, Shatner was selfish, not taking Sulu with him. That would have really been it.
I don't think George Takei was invited.
I know. That was terrible. But, I mean, let's look at the carbon footprint that this spaceship has. You know, our president has declared a code red. Now, the Democrats are trying to spend $5 trillion to combat climate change. And here we got millionaires and billionaires due to a huge carbon footprint to hurt our fish and our bears and the water and the whole earth. I'm just shocked, Frank. I'm just shocked.
Yeah, well, fair enough, Neil. I don't know what exactly the carbon footprint of these space flights are, but I know a lot of people have raised that as a concern. Let me say hello to Mike the Millennial from Denver. Hello, Mike.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Marano. Wow, it is really an honor to speak with you. I'm a big fan of your show. I've listened for a long time. This is the first time I've called in. But first of all, thank you so much. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. So on space, you know, I think it's really kind of an interesting – actually on the point of going into space, because we know earlier this year the youngest person ever went into space. And I think Jeff Bezos has plans in the future to take a 90-year-old to space next year. Me personally, I would definitely love to go to space. But, you know, I kind of had a question for you about on this as well.
Go ahead. What's your question?
So do you think that, like, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, that they will ever reach Mars? Like, realistically, do you think that, like, the leading authorities on this will ever actually reach Mars one day?
Well, I don't know. I certainly hope so. I know Buzz Aldrin has been banging the drum for having people making a trip to Mars and colonizing Mars a lifetime for people. Like, these, he wants people to go there and volunteer to spend the rest of their lives there. I don't know how close that is to reality. We had the Mars rover get there, but who knows? I certainly hope so, Mike, but it's anybody's guess, quite frankly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it would be definitely a positive thing, I think, for, you know, just space exploration in general. But I think there's a lot of risks associated with it, obviously, like, well, would we have the manpower to get there and the technological, you know, capabilities. But I think it would be just really cool. And I think it's just amazing all the advancements we're seeing with that. I had one final question.
Sure, go ahead.
Would you go into space with Frankie Russo if given the opportunity?
Well, as long as I got to go for free, absolutely. I'd go with anybody. Thank you, Mike. If you're just tuning in, we've been having some problems with the phones. For some reason, and we haven't got a finger on it yet, but for some reason, the phones only do that crackling static sound at night. But our engineers have alerted to it, and I've been alerted to it, and I'm sure they're on the case. All the shows during the day yesterday went fine. People were able to call in and not have that crackling sound. So I beg your patience and your indulgence for listening. Now, if you are stuck here on Earth, then you really need to worry about inflation. Inflation is out of control. The national debt is unsustainable. The economic policies that are coming out of Washington and the Federal Reserve are not going to do anything to make the situation better. Inflation is skyrocketing, just like William Shatner in that Blue Origin flight. And if your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, it's getting eaten away right under your nose. Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and protect your retirement. If you have an existing retirement account, roll it over into a gold or a silver IRA and think about doing it with legacy precious metals. When the stock market collapsed and Americans lost their retirement, those that were invested in gold saw huge gains and avoided the financial carnage. That's why gold really should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy is the company you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
WABC.
Good morrow, everybody. That's Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky. There was just one funny story out of Turkey that I had to bring to your attention. And I've had it on my list now for all week. But a Turkish man was... he was out drinking. And they thought he was missing. And then they organize a search party for him. And the guy sees this search party go out. And he joins the search party for himself. So these Turkish news outlets reported this very odd affair. Now, it's not as funny and as sensationalistic as a lot of the news outlets have made it out to be. The headline in a lot of the newspapers basically was a missing drunk Turkish man spent hours helping a search party look for himself. Now, that is, it's sort of clickbait. It's not necessarily the case. But let me tell you what actually did happen. It's not that far off. So this man in question, a 51-year-old construction worker named Behan Mutlu, who lives in Bursa, which is a city in northwestern Turkey, he did join a search and rescue party that was looking for him. So this guy did join his own search party, initially unaware that people believed he was missing. But he didn't search for hours, and he wasn't drunk while searching. So he told this Turkish newspaper that he was with a friend at a villa in the forest having drinks, and then he fell asleep around 1 a.m. And then Mr. Mutlu stated that his friend had not properly understood him when he stated he was going to sleep, which was why he was reported missing. So he tells the friend that he's going to sleep. The friend didn't understand. Friend reports him missing. Mutlu, the now missing guy who's not really missing, awakens at around 5 a.m. and noticed a search party in the forest. Unaware that he'd been reported missing as a result of the misunderstanding with his friend, he joins in the search. So he searched for more than a half hour, 30 minutes or so, not hours. So he searched for more than a half hour before search and rescue crews began shouting his name, at which time he realized they were searching for him. And he told the media outlet he broke into a cold sweat when he heard his name. Now, part of the problem is, let this be a lesson to you, part of the problem is that Mutlu had changed phones, which was why authorities who tried calling him couldn't reach him at his old number. He also stated that when the story started gaining a global audience, he'd been at work and that his internet access isn't very good. So he was initially unaware that this story had gone viral globally. So in sum, Mutlu had tried to help but was unaware because of poor communication the night before that he was wrongly believed to be missing. It also appeared that at the time of the search, he'd been asleep for 4 hours and was not drunk. So that's the, and now you know the rest of the story. One other story I want to bring to your attention before we return to the phones at 800-848-WABC. This is just so incredibly dumb. And in some ways goes into the category of everything else we've been talking about. A Seattle school is canceling their Halloween parade because why? You don't even need me to tell you, right? It marginalizes students of color. A Seattle elementary school canceled its annual Halloween parade this year, saying it marginalizes students of color who do not celebrate the holiday. Well, excuse me, is there anything uniquely white about Halloween? I mean, is that why those Klansmen are dressed up in costumes? Because it's a holiday for white people only, and those are Halloween costumes? No. So the decision to cancel the pumpkin parade, where students can dress up in Halloween costumes, came from the racial equity team at Benjamin Franklin Day Elementary School after 5 years of discussion. They discussed this for 5 years? My goodness. Quote, there are numerous community and neighborhood events where students and families who wish to can celebrate Halloween. That's the word from a Seattle Public Schools spokeswoman in a statement provided to KTTH radio talk show host Jason Rantz. Quote, historically, the pumpkin parade marginalizes students of color who do not celebrate the holiday. Specifically, these students have requested to be isolated on campus while the event took place. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. This is crazy. I remember being a kid in elementary school. I used to love the Halloween parades that we'd have in school. You dress up, you march around the school a couple of times, you see everybody in their costumes, you go back to the classroom, people bring in candy, the teacher gives candy, sometimes there's parents that come and bring candy. It's fun. It's really a day to have candy, dress up, and not have to worry too much about schoolwork. But this statement continued, in alliance with SPS's unwavering commitment to students of color, SPS stands for Seattle Public Schools, specifically African-American males. I don't understand why this is a racial issue. I just can't wrap my head around it. The staff is committed to supplanting the pumpkin parade with more inclusive and educational opportunities during the school day. The statement continues, adding that the decision had nothing to do with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Well, they should have just blamed it on COVID, because that's a less foolish reason to do this. School principal Stanley Jascott confirmed that the parade was canceled. He told Fox News, Halloween is a very complex issue for schools. What? Why is Halloween a complex issue for schools? Halloween has got to be one of the simplest things to understand for everybody, for anybody and everybody. You just dress up and beg for candy. Yes, I agree, this event marginalized our students of color. I'm yet to hear how the students of color were marginalized. Several of our students historically opted for an alternate activity in the library while the pumpkin parade took place. Well, okay, good for them. There's nothing stopping them from participating, and maybe they want to participate in the alternate activity. Did anybody think that maybe the alternate activity was marginalizing the white and Asian students? Huh? Huh? Those whites like time in the library as well. This was an isolating situation and not consistent with our values of being an inclusive and safe place for all our students, especially students of color and those with a sensitivity to all the noise and excitement of the parade. Whoa. Whoa. So now, are we doing this because black male students don't want to participate? Or are we doing this because students that don't like, that are sensitive to noise and excitement, don't want to participate? Either way, there's a simple solution. You don't have to participate. I cannot understand, and nowhere in all the coverage of this has it been explained to me, why this is a racial issue. The school informed parents of the cancellation in an October 8th newsletter and asked that they not let their children dress up in costumes this year. Not let their children dress up in costumes. The newsletter explained that costume parties can be uncomfortable for many children who can't afford one, and that loud noise levels and crowds can also be upsetting for kids. Really? Loud noise levels and crowds are upsetting for kids. Loud noise levels are upsetting to me as an adult. That's why, you know, I don't participate in these Halloween parades. But you don't have to, it sounds like. Don't you think these kids that are not participating would love to have a free period to just joke around in the library, maybe quietly read or talk to their friends or watch a movie, maybe a Halloween, age-appropriate Halloween movie? Of course they would. I would love to meet the student that says, you know, here I am, black and male, and I just can't stand this Halloween parade. I'd love to meet the student that says, I am just being driven nuts with all the noise and excitement. It's far too exciting for me. Instead, students this year will partake in inclusive fall events, like thematic units of study about the fall. Oh, come on, how boring does that sound? And reviewing autumnal artwork. Autumnal? Who knew that was even an adjective? Again, the more you know. First we learned from, I think it was Doris, maybe, I don't remember who it was, but first we learned that Sally Hemings was also Thomas Jefferson's half-sister-in-law, which I did not know. And now we're learning that the word autumnal is an adjective. I mean, wow. You want to comment on this, you're welcome to 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. David Malkin, whose seven-year-old attends BF Day, called the decision an exercise in affluent white vanity that is wokeism. He's right. I don't see any way in which this actually addresses any inequities to the extent that there are any inequities. You know, this just seems like grandstanding on behalf of the principal and the staff who are predominantly white. This is exactly right. This is exactly right. Malkin, who's Asian, said parents weren't involved in the decision. Of course! Why would the parents be involved? Because they may inject a little bit of common sense into this discussion. I'm sure they don't want to hear from anyone of any race or ethnicity that doesn't really want to go along with them in lockstep. The parents never would have gone along with this. They want their kids to have a fun day and dress up and getting candy. Even the Asian parents, like David Malkin. Comment as you see fit, 800-848-9222. This reminds me of the old joke that Rush Limbaugh used to tell. And it's appropriate to so many different scenarios. And I don't remember if Rush was the originator of the joke or if he was just the first person I heard tell it. So if there's somebody that was the father of this joke, then forgive me. But first person I heard tell it was Rush. So God is watching CNN and the Fox News Channel and MSNBC, and he's read all these articles about taking down Thomas Jefferson statue and he's seen all the coverage of the failure to pass a reconciliation bill, and he just says, "All right, that's it. I am ending the world tomorrow." Maybe Monday he'll say, I'll put my own spin on it. I'm ending the world Monday. That's it. So God calls up the editor in chief, one media outlet, ABC News, no affiliation with this radio station, and says, I just want to let you know I'm ending the world on Monday. And ABC News says, oh, this is great. Can we have this as an exclusive story? No, you can't. I'm going to tell everybody. So God then calls all the other media outlets and tells them world to end on Monday. And then the next day, this, as you might imagine, is the front page in every newspaper in the world. And so you have the Wall Street Journal say, world to end on Monday, markets to close early. You have USA Today says world ending Monday, full graphs and analysis on page 12. And then you have the New York Times say on their front page, world to end on Monday, women and minorities most affected. And the reason that joke is so funny to me is because it's so true. There's nothing racist about celebrating Halloween. There's nothing racist about a Halloween parade. There's nothing insensitive about a Halloween parade. Halloween is supposed to be fun. It's a fun holiday. It's a silly holiday. There's nothing racist about it. If there's an issue of economic inequity, then let's, then I'm sure if we had a fund to kick in a couple of bucks to buy children Halloween costumes who can't afford them, I'm sure a lot of parents would give. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would go out and buy the costumes themselves and donate them. How many, realistically, how many children at Benjamin Franklin Day Elementary School do you really think are unable to afford a Halloween costume? Realistically, are we talking 10? Are we talking 20? Are we talking 100? Talking 120? I doubt it. But let's say it's 120. You're going to tell me you can't find a store in the Seattle area that would donate 120 Halloween costumes? Of course you would. They would do that for the tax deduction and for the goodwill alone. You're going to tell me that the PTA wouldn't buy 100 costumes? Of course they would. This is the most ridiculous argument since I heard they were taking down Thomas Jefferson's statue. 800-848-9222. Chris is in Mount Vernon. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Frank. I just got to say, I miss the days when you could say, well, it's a free country. I used to be able to say that all the time for all different kind of things. You know, you want to do that? Go ahead. It's free country. I'm not into it, but you go ahead. What's wrong with that? I don't get it, Frank. I really don't. My kids love Halloween. My daughter missed it last year because, you know, with the whole COVID thing. She's looking so forward to this Halloween. I couldn't even imagine what would happen if they take it away from her. It's just, I don't know, man. I don't get it.
Neither do I, Chris. That makes two of us. That makes two of us. Chris, thanks for the call. What is your daughter going to be for Halloween?
She's going to be Wonder Woman.
Oh, great. That's a fun costume.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, she was a bunny rabbit. She was a couple of things already, but now she's going to be Wonder Woman this year.
Well, that's fun. Happy Halloween to her, and hopefully we'll chat again soon. 800-848-9222. You know what? I'm still trying to figure out my Halloween costume. I've gotten a couple of good suggestions. Somebody suggested Grandpa Munster. Somebody else suggested Phantom of the Opera. Somebody else suggested Donald Trump. My go-to is always usually Curtis Sliwa. So I don't know what I'm going to be, but maybe I can find a way to be inflation. Maybe I can pick a costume with a lot of balloons or something, and I'll have a bunch of blown up balloons with dollar signs on them, or cost of living, or cost of food, and I'll have it blown up. I'll be inflated. But that's making light of a very real problem. Inflation is a problem. The price of everything is going up and has gone up. We're going to have $5 a gallon gasoline pretty soon. It is rough out there. And fortunately, though, there is a solution. And gold has always been a hedge against inflation, and it continues to be a hedge against inflation. If you doubt me, look it up for yourself. You can take a look at, as inflation and as prices have risen, what that has done to the price of gold. The price of gold has dramatically outpaced inflation. So doesn't it make sense, if you think inflation is here to stay, doesn't it make sense to be investing in gold? Well, that's where Legacy Precious Metals comes in. If you have your money sitting in a traditional retirement account, that's a mistake, because the inflation tax is eating that money away. So if you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it in to a gold or a silver IRA, and think about doing it with Legacy Precious Metals. the last time the stock market collapsed, people that were invested in gold saw big gains and everyone else saw financial carnage. That's why gold really should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased counsel based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals. Write this number down, please. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com.
77 WABC, where the action is. Oh, hot diggity dog, diggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, diggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight.
Never dreamed anybody could kiss that away, bring me bliss that away. What a kiss that away, what a wonderful feeling to feel that away. Tell me, where have you been all my life?
Oh, hot diggity dog, diggity boom.
The great Perry Como, hot diggity. Who would want to listen to me when you could listen to Perry Como? He is terrific. He is absolutely top-notch, as far as I'm concerned. Still, he has a voice that is timeless. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on anything we're covering, that's 1-800-848-WABC, 1-2-3-4-5-6, open lines. We're having a little bit of a problem with static on the phone, so if your phone line is too staticky, we may not go to you, but to give it a shot anyway. And if you want to participate online, you could find me on Facebook, at facebook.com/MoranoFan. If you're on Facebook, there's also a Facebook fan group that you can join if you want to participate in discussions about the show. Whether you like the show or don't like the show, as long as you listen to it, we welcome your participation. And we'd appreciate it if you kept the commentary somewhat constructive. No need to attack other hosts or bring up other matters not related to the show. Somebody, I think it was Joe, posted a photo on there. Yes, it was Joe Piro, that I thought was absolutely hysterical. And maybe I'll share it on my Facebook page, but you can actually see it if you go to the Facebook group. It says, Happy Halloween, 77 WABC Radio. And then it's a picture of the family from the Munsters. And it's Bernard McGurk as Herman Munster, who's basically the Frankenstein's monster character. It's Eddie Munster as – it's Sid Rosenberg as Eddie Munster. And it's Lydia Serrani as Vivian, right? It was Vivian who was the woman on there. It's Juliette Huddy as Marilyn, and it's me as Grandpa Al Munster, Grandpa Al Lewis, Grandpa Munster. I think it's hysterical. It's very funny. So if you want to see Sid as Eddie Munster and Bernie as Herman Munster, myself as Grandpa Munster, as well as the ladies as Marilyn and Vivian, you can go and join that Facebook group. Just type Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. You know, yesterday I was my wife was still writing out the thank you cards from her baby shower. And so it's usually our time after we have dinner to watch an episode of The Sopranos or Cheers, depending on how much time we have together. So she was not ready to participate in our shared daily television program. So she's writing out her thank you cards. So I watch the one cable news show during the week, which I really enjoy, Tucker Carlson, but I a lot of times I don't watch it during the week because if around that time is when my wife and I get to watch a show. So I usually don't watch Tucker, even though I enjoy Tucker. So there's no baseball on, so I couldn't watch the Mets. I didn't see any wrestling on, no football. So I put on Tucker. And I learned for the first time what I'd seen this all over social media, but I had no idea what it was. The term "Let's Go Brandon." Have you seen this on social media? Have you heard about this? Are you aware of this? I had seen it everywhere, and I just kind of didn't care about it. I figured it was something dumb. And sure enough, it is, right? So "Let's Go Brandon" is basically a so what happened was they were chanting "F Joe Biden" at a NASCAR rally or a NASCAR event, and the female reporter who was questioning one of the racers, who I suppose is named Brandon, she said to him, "Oh, you hear everybody chanting in the crowd, 'Let's go, Brandon,' when they weren't chanting 'Let's go, Brandon.' They were chanting F Joe Biden." So apparently saying "Let's go, Brandon" is a way of saying F Joe Biden, but it's also a way at pointing out how the media, at least some in the media, don't tell the truth about what's actually happening. And I just think it's the stupidest thing in the world. First of all, why would you be wanting to encourage people saying F Joe Biden? Now, Joe Biden's the president. You should have respect for whomever the president is, whether it's Trump, Biden, Obama, Bush, Clinton. You should never say F whomever. First of all, you should never say F anybody, but especially the president. And if you don't like Joe Biden, just don't vote for him. Vote for the other guy. Give money to the other guy or gal. What do you have to curse for? I would never participate in a chant of a curse at any president of any political party. I think it's classless. I don't know how people think. I don't know if they think it's fun or they think it's funny. Plus, let's say you don't like Joe Biden. If Joe Biden is effed, that F's you. I mean, instead, you should be rooting for Joe Biden. You want Biden to do well, because the better Biden does, the better. Now, he hasn't done a good job so far, in my opinion, but the better Biden or Trump does, the better the country does. So I root for every president to succeed. And when they don't do well, as is the case with Biden, you see the chaos at the border, you see inflation, you see the disaster in Afghanistan and with foreign policy, you see the I'd be hard-pressed to name one success. But when they don't do well, point out what they're doing poorly and what they could do better. This whole notion of F Joe Biden or F Trump, as Robert De Niro used to like to say, I find it so juvenile. And now that we have a code word for it, "Let's go, Brandon," now that I know what it is, I think it's even more stupid than I envisioned it being. So that's my two cents. "Let's go, Brandon." I think it's ridiculous. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're talking about. Still to come, we'll do the AC report at 3:30. And at 4:30, after the $1,000 minute, you will get to hear from Karen Turk, who is a former beauty queen, now a kind of a conservative pundit and activist who has made her cause guardianships. And she's got a new book out called Behind the Headlines. And I'm looking forward to talking with her about that. And I also want to get into this Katie Couric issue, because she made a pretty remarkable admission in her book. And I didn't think there was any more good stuff to mine out of that book, but apparently there is. So we'll get into it. 800-848-9222. Henry is in Manhattan. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Frank. I bet very few of your listeners knows what Thomas Jefferson had to do with the polygraph.
Well, fill us in, Henry.
Okay. Well, it's not the polygraph that most people would think of, because this was pre-electricity. Thomas Jefferson was actually the first proponent of information technology in the U.S., especially as a president, in that he promoted the polygraph, which was an invention that allowed a copy of a document, a letter, to be written at the same time as the original. There's a polygraph on the desk of Jefferson at Monticello. And the reason the Library of Congress has a lot of Jefferson's letters is that they are actually the polygraph copy of Jefferson's letters. And that's his role in information technology. There was one owned by Benjamin Franklin, but neither of them invented it, in spite of the fact that they were both inventors. But Jefferson gave it as a gift, a state gift to several world leaders and other country leaders, is what I'm talking about. And he said it was the finest invention of the present era.
Well, thank you for that that lesson, Henry. Didn't know any of that, I have to confess, but can't say I'm surprised. All right, coming up, Katie Couric interviewed Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, somebody that's considered something of a legend. And she edited this interview out, one of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's responses. I'll tell you why and what she intended to say in mere moments. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everybody, this is The Other Side of Midnight. You know, I thought I might have been a couple of weeks ago when the news articles about Katie Couric's book came out. I thought I might have been a little harsh on Katie Couric. And, you know, I didn't like some of the things that she put in there about everybody. And I didn't like this in general, this attitude that she had where she's better than everybody. So now this new story I read yesterday leads me to think that, no, I was not too harsh on Katie Couric. So she's got this book out. I'll tell you, I hate to do this, but I may have to buy this book, because every article that's in this book, she's revealing something interesting. And I was talking about this with Dominic Carter 3 hours ago, and he said, oh, you know why they do that, because they want a bestseller. And the Katie Couric defenders are saying, oh, her publisher encouraged her to put all this salacious stuff in there. Well, she did not disappoint. There are some celebrity memoirs that are just great, and then there are some that are lame because they don't reveal anything. I mean, I'm a big pro wrestling fan, so I've read a lot of pro wrestling biographies, autobiographies, and there's some that I haven't read them all yet. There's some that are great. Like one of the best ones that I read was Bret the Hitman Hart. His book was terrific. Mick Foley's books are terrific. Chris Jericho's books are terrific. And then there's some that are okay. Some that are okay. My hero, Ric Flair, his book is okay. And then there's some that are not good. The two best examples of books that are not good in the wrestling world are one book by Hulk Hogan and one book by The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, who, by the way, you'll be happy to know, is still not ruling out a run for the presidency. I'm sure you're very relieved to know that The Rock has not yet ruled out a run for the presidency. I know I am. So, I mean, there's just so many factual errors in these two books, and they don't know what's going on, where you could tell they put no effort into actually running these books. This Katie Couric book, boy, she laid it all out there. Every scandal that she's ever been a witness to or a party to, it's all in the pages of this book. So here's the latest. Katie Couric, when she was working for Yahoo, was making like $15 million, some crazy amount of money. which is why I don't understand why she had to write this book and put all the stuff in there, because she's got to be worth $30, $40, $50 million already. She's got a $6 million home in the Hamptons. She's got houses everywhere. She could make money doing all sorts of things, but she chose to write this book and put it all in there. So she interviewed Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's no longer with us, back in 2016. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is considered sort of a legal legend, was best friends with Antonin Scalia, and especially a legend for people on the progressive left. So Couric, in this book, which is out October 26th, admits in a 2016 interview with Justice Ginsburg, she withheld Ginsburg's harshest comments on kneeling during the national anthem. Why? Not for length, not for clarity. Justice Ginsburg's comments were quite clear. The editing was done in an effort to protect the late Supreme Court justice. That's what Katie Couric wrote in her memoir, Going There. She felt that Ginsburg, who was 83 at the time, may not have totally gotten what Couric was asking her. She was elderly and probably didn't understand the question. Now, the interview was eventually published by Yahoo. It did include Ginsburg saying that she believes that not standing during the national anthem as an act of protest is, quote, dumb and disrespectful. That was included in there. Here's what was not included. It did not include her strongest condemnations of that act of kneeling during the national anthem. This is what Justice Ginsburg said, which Katie Couric chose to omit. Not standing for the anthem shows a contempt for a government that has made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life, which they probably could not have lived in the places they came from. As they became older, they realized that this was a youthful folly, and that's why education is important. I think it is a terrible thing to do, but I wouldn't lock a person up for doing it. I would point out how ridiculous it seems to me to do such an act. Now, that is a perfectly cogent opinion. That is something that I think a lot of the country, including me, agrees with. But is there anything in Justice Ginsburg's answer there which indicates she doesn't understand the question? No. You know, not understanding of the question would be if you say, oh, you know, Justice Ginsburg, what do you think about people kneeling during the national anthem? And your response is, well, I'm really concerned about traffic at the Major Deegan Expressway. That's not understanding the question. She understood perfectly what the question is, and her response was right on the money. But Katie Couric felt it was up to her to edit that response out, because Couric, being an RBG fan, it's her words, a big RBG fan, and feeling protective of her and the controversy the comments would likely embroil, wrote in the book that she lost a lot of sleep and felt extremely conflicted over deciding whether she should include Ginsburg's full thoughts on the matter. As well, the day after the interview, the Supreme Court's head of public affairs emailed Couric to say Ginsburg had misspoken and requested that her comments on the matter be removed from the piece. Couric eventually mostly did as they requested. Now, to me, this casts a pall over everything Katie Couric has ever done or will ever do as a journalist. She's not a journalist. She's not a journalist. And Justice Ginsburg did not misspeak. It's not up to Katie Couric. This woman, Justice Ginsburg, agreed to sit down with Katie Couric for an interview. Katie Couric asked her a simple question based on what was a big issue in this country at the time. Justice Ginsburg gave a terrific answer. So it's not up to Katie Couric to save Justice Ginsburg from the enmity of the progressive left that adores her, which is what she tried to do here. And to think that she did this knowing that this would result in more interest for the interview if she included it, more clicks for the interview, more views for the interview if she included it, to think that she still edited that out, one, to protect her, and two, because this press spokesman for the this press person from the Supreme Court asked that they do it, it's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. That's not what journalists do. This isn't journalism. This, and, you know, I, who don't claim to be a journalist, would never do this. I've pre-taped a number of interviews over the years. And if somebody said something that I thought would make the audience not like them, which has happened many times, I would never edit it out. Never. John Meacham, who, whatever you might think of him, is a pretty skilled writer and biographer. He wrote this biography of George H.W. Bush. I have the book. I haven't read it yet. But I've watched and listened to many interviews with John Meacham about this book. And after the book was, when the book was ready to be published, right before it, John Meacham said to George Bush, he sent him a collection of all the quotes about a certain subject that he was going to include. And Meacham said to Bush, I can't let you take any of these quotes back, but if you want to add or expand on any of these quotes to give them proper context, then I have no problem with allowing you to do that. And Bush said, to his credit, President Bush said, nope, it's fine as is. That would be a responsible thing to do. Katie Couric should have said to the Supreme Court spokesman, public affairs person, should have said, no, I'm sorry, that's what Justice Ginsburg said, but if there's anything she wants to add, I'll be happy to include that as well. That would have been the responsible thing to do. What Katie Couric did here, and I'm shocked that she's admitting this, who, if you have a news organization, why would you ever hire Katie Couric in the future after she's admitted this is what she does? And she's gotten caught doing this before with people. So that's my two cents. You're welcome to comment, agree, disagree, somewhere in between, 800-848-9222. And I'm going to ask Juliette Huddy about this when she comes in later, because I can't imagine, and Juliette has had a lot of experience in television and in radio, interviewing a lot of people much more, you know, much more so than I have, that are pretty high profile. I guarantee you Juliette's never done anything like this. Once you do this, you're no longer a journalist. You're a showman. You're a showman. And not a very good one. It reminds me of that scene in Broadcast News with William Hurt, where he fakes the, I don't want to give too much of the film away if you haven't seen it, but see it. And those of you that have seen it know what I'm talking about. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on this Katie Couric editing of this RBG story. 800-848-9222. And again, we are having some problems with the phone lines in terms of static. So if we don't put you on the air because your phone line is too staticky, don't take it personally. It's a problem that we're working on solving, and hopefully we'll get it fixed by this time tomorrow night, because tomorrow morning, I should say, we do the Ask Frank Anything hour, which is almost entirely phone calls. So if we have all sorts of static, that will make for a very difficult to listen to situation. Also want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast. You know, my wife and I went and met our child's future pediatrician today for the first time. We liked him very much, but he's not awake at this time, and who could blame him? And he says, well, does the show podcast? I said, yes, of course it's podcast. And that's something I'd like all of you to keep in mind as well, especially those of you that don't get to listen to all 4 hours, because we want to encourage you to listen to all 4 hours, whether you can listen live or you have to listen the next day. Just subscribe to the podcast. Search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano on iTunes, Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you leave a nice review, a 5-star review along with a nice comment, it will actually help other people discover this podcast as well. So just search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. hit the subscribe button, leave a nice comment, and we will hopefully be able to get more people exposed to the kind of content that we're doing on a daily basis. 800-848-9222. Bill is in Manhattan. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how you doing? I can't believe I'm on the air. How you doing?
Why can't you believe it, Bill?
Because I just called him 10 seconds ago.
Well, you know, I can put you back on hold if you prefer.
Listen, I want to say something. I'm so glad you talked about this, you know, frankly, because this happened actually recently with WNYC did a 20-year anniversary on 9/11, and they brought on a woman named Shamima. She was in Afghanistan when it started. And she was dressed as a boy to go to school, and then she went to school, and she has an organization now that helps Afghan girls. And during the interview, the woman who does the interview says to her, during the invasion of Afghanistan, you know how they like to say, during the invasion, and the woman actually stopped and said, excuse me, but I don't consider what President Bush did as an invasion. And man, you could have heard you could have heard a pin drop. And she said, he liberated me. President Bush liberated us. We were treated like animals.
But they included all this in the interview. They didn't edit it out.
No. Here's what they did. During the transcript that they do on WNYC, they did not put that in the transcript of the actual interview. I actually sent it to you so you could see.
Please, yes. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
Yeah, it was perfect. So that's why I'm so glad you said this thing about Ginsburg, because I'm going to go back on the Facebook link and comment. I'm not going to mention you. I don't have to drag you into it. But I'm going to say what this mega the woman who does the On Point, it's called, on WNYC.
Yes, I've heard it. Yes.
Okay. The Meghna, whatever her name is, it's a nice Indian American lady. She said this to Meghna, and she said, and man, I'm telling you, you wouldn't believe the reaction. They hate that. They hate when an Afghan woman actually said to them, hey, George Bush helped us. We don't look at it as an invasion. Okay. We loved what you did for us. So it was so profound, because this is what you put tied into what you were saying. This is what the left does in the media. They're not a journalist. They're pushing a narrative. And for that line to be left out of the interview of the transcript, it's so profound.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that, Bill, and thank you for telling me about it, because I was unaware, and shame on WNYC if that's the case. Dana is in Brookville. Dana, where's Brookville?
It's near Oyster Bay, Jericho, Mutton Town.
All right, okay. What's on your mind, Dana?
Katie Couric. I've worked with her once. I worked in the television business for 35 years.
You know, Dana, I'm sorry. I'm not able to understand what you're saying. Call back and maybe we'll be on a better phone line. 800-848-9222. Ted is in Forest Hills. Hello, Ted.
Hi. I always love your show.
Thanks.
What I wanted to say is, wasn't Katie Couric kind of snotty to the former vice presidential candidate from Arkansas a few years ago?
Who was the vice presidential candidate from Arkansas?
I mean, from Alaska.
Oh, Sarah Palin.
Yeah, Sarah Palin, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, but...
question, what do you read or something?
Yeah, I thought those questions were fine. People do get curious about what a vice presidential candidate is reading. And you know what? She asked the questions. Sarah Palin didn't have to answer. Some she did, some she didn't. And people can make their own judgments. But here, we didn't get to make our own judgments because Katie Couric chose to edit this interview and keep the public from seeing what Katie Couric was really saying. And I think that's a shame. 800-848-9222. Mike is in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike. Hi there, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. Mike, get close to that phone. I'm having a tough time hearing you.
Yes, Katie Couric is the typical talking head leftist hack. You know, she always has been. She always will be. She doesn't want to lose her friends in the Hamptons. She likes her position, so it's not a shock. I see more why Scalia was such good friends with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I actually agreed more with Scalia than Ginsburg, but I always saw what a
She was always a fantastic woman with ton of spirit and ton of strength.
And she and you're exactly right, Mike. Thank you. And she accomplished a great deal before she was even on the Supreme Court as well as an attorney in private practice. And, yeah, their friendship is really something nice. And my friend Mike Porcelli made a suggestion, which I think is just aces. He suggested put a statue at the Queens-Brooklyn border. Because Scalia was from Queens and Ginsburg was from Brooklyn, and they were such good friends. They'd go on vacation together and spend a lot of time together, and have a statue of the two of them shaking hands and or embracing at the Queens and Brooklyn border, and have that be a statue that's not only a tribute to two great jurists, but have it be a statue that's a tribute to the idea of civility. Not in government, in the law, and in politics, because if there's anything we need right now, it's civility. We're living in an era where people think it's fun or funny to chant F Joe Biden at sporting events. And if anything, I think we clearly need a little bit more of that Scalia and Ginsburg civility in our public discourse. By the way, speaking of things that we need more of, how great was it to hear Dan Ingram last Sunday in the 100th anniversary special programming that we've been doing? Well, for we are doing a real public service, I think. I'm a fan of WABC, and I appreciate the music radio heritage as well as the talk radio heritage. And it's another big weekend here because if you join us at 3 p.m. this and every Sunday in October, we are doing a one-hour special in which we honor various 77 WABC icons. Last weekend's special highlighted the legendary Dan Ingram. This Sunday, October 17th, we are highlighting Music Radio 77 WABC. It's a must listen. It's a 1 hour special jam packed with highlights of Music Radio 77 WABC. It's all a part of 77 WABC celebrating 100 years. It'll be presented documentary style, and we'll hear from our very own Cousin Brucey, Tony Orlando, and Sid Rosenberg. How did Sid Rosenberg sneak his way into this? What does Sid Rosenberg have to do with Music Radio WABC? I'd love to know. You know, I really admire Sid, because how Sid found a way to get included in this is remarkable. It's remarkable. Thanks to John and Margot Katsimatidis, our glorious ownership team, for making this all possible. Join us this and every Sunday in October at 3 p.m. as 77 WABC celebrates 100 years. All right, we're going to do the AC report in just a minute. We'll continue to take your calls throughout the hour. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC. This is the AC Report.
Well, they blew up the Chicken Man in Philly last night. It blew up his house, too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies, someday he comes back. Put your makeup on, fish your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
It is time for our weekly look at Monopoly City, America's playground. the most fun city in New Jersey and a strong candidate for most fun city in the Northeast, certainly the most interesting city in New Jersey. That is Atlantic City, the AC report. And there's few people that know more about what's happening in Atlantic City than the great Chuck Darrow, veteran journalist, casino lifestyle specialist, and a writer with bettorsinsider.com. Chuck, it's great to talk with you again. How have you been?
Swinging, baby. Absolutely. And I'm still vertical, so I guess that's what makes it so good.
Well, then you're ahead of the game. Now,
great to talk to you.
It's great to talk with you, Chuck. A ton of stuff happening in Atlantic City. Let me first ask you about the, I would characterize it as the rather surprising resignation of the CEO of the Ocean. And this was, I found it pretty unexpected. But tell us what exactly happened here and what are you hearing on the inside line about what's behind this?
Well, earlier this week, Terry Glibacki, who for the past couple of years has been CEO of Ocean Casino Resort, which, of course, was the revitalized, resurrected Revel casino hotel, she up and said, hey, I'm out of here. And I think it took pretty much everybody, certainly everybody who sort of looks in from the outside, by surprise. There has been no official reason given. Nobody seems to know quite exactly what the real story is, and it could be anything. She has been in the casino world in Atlantic City for decades. I mean, she goes way back to all the way back to Trump Plaza and the Trump Organization back in the 80s and 90s. Or 90s anyway, and so it could be that she simply has is time for her to, you know, she felt maybe she wants to spend more time with family or other personal reasons. But there is one theory.
That's never true, though, is it? Does anybody really ever resign for personal reasons?
Yeah, and actually, there was the CEO of what is now called Rivers in Philadelphia. But at the time was still being called Sugar House Casino on the Delaware River in downtown Philly. She unfortunately had some health issues and also had been a veteran of decades in the industry, but she, I believe, had some health issues and ultimately, figured that was more important than running a casino. So, it's probably just business decision and not necessarily that someone jumped, but they were pushed. I mean, that's more often not in that realm and at that level in the casino industry. But here's one, I think, plausible. I'm not going to say this is, and please, by no stretch do I know anything that's certain about this. But let me throw this out at you. But this week there have been licensing hearings for the family, and I forgot to look it up, and it's the name escapes me at the moment, but it's the family that actually owns Little Caesar's Pizza, which also owns the Motor City Casino in Detroit. There had been several post-Revel owners, I'm going to keep this as brief as possible, of Ocean. And the current owner is Luxor, which is a hedge fund, New York-based hedge fund. And they have been 100% owners of the casino for a couple of years now. And they are in the process of selling 50% of the company to the family that owns the Motor City. I believe they also own the Detroit Red Wings as well. This week they're having licensing hearings because, of course, you can't own a casino without passing muster by the state or from the state. So now, as an extra background, for many years, for the first, the first 15 or so years or 17 years, whatever it was, Borgata was a 50-50 partnership between Boyd Gaming and MGM Resorts. And ultimately, Boyd Gaming was, even though they had an equal stake, Boyd Gaming, up until they sold their share
to MGM, which now owns Borgata, 100% of Borgata, Boyd Gaming, equal partner, but the managing partner. So they actually ran the casino. So it's certainly plausible that this is in, she sort of sees the writing on the wall, because Luxor is a holding company. It is not a gaming company. That ultimately, once the sale is approved by the state, that the company that runs, whatever the actual entity that runs Motor City in Detroit, will become the managing partner, because they have some real casino running experience.
And you think maybe they've indicated they want to bring in their own person here?
Well, because they have an infrastructure, and I have a feeling that there'll be some degree of duplication that will be eliminated, quite possibly right at the top. It's not unusual for one person to have, to run more than one casino. I mean, Caesars for years rather have had regional presidents. And I suspect that again, I'm not saying, I don't want anybody to think this is the case, but I personally will not be surprised if ultimately we find out that that this Detroit-based company will be the managing partner of Ocean.
Interesting. Now, she was also, Terry Glebacki was also the head of some Atlantic City Casino Association, wasn't she?
Right. It's right. It's the, basically the trade organization that represents the Atlantic City casino industry. The lobbying arm essentially is what it is, a lobbying group. And
do we know who's going to take over in that role at this point?
No, but historically it has been a sitting CEO or GM, because each company has its own title. For instance, Bally's, I believe, the woman who, or I'm sorry, the man that was a woman, we can talk about that for a second too. Whoever who is now running Bally's, now that it's no longer owned by Caesars, but by Bally's Corp out of Rhode Island, they have the title of GM. Other properties have the title of CEO, but we just don't, we have no idea who is going to take over that position as the chairman of the casino.
And so in her time that she was there, she was one of four female casino heads, right?
Yeah, just within the past year or so, right. Borgata, Ocean, Bally's, and Tropicana all had women, which was unheard of, unprecedented in Atlantic City. Historically, overwhelmingly, the top people in the casinos have been male, but there have been a number of other women through the decades, but never had there been four out of nine properties being led and run by women. So now she was three, and also when Bally's, again, when Bally's changed ownership, the woman who was running the show there was replaced.
We're talking with Chuck Darrow. He's been covering casino and lifestyle issues for a long time, a lot of other issues as well. You can read him at bettorsinsider.com. That's BETTORS, insider.com. Chuck, she had a pretty good record at Ocean. A lot of people, her predecessors, both when it was Revel and even the Ocean, had a tough time making money. She sort of turned around that property, didn't she?
If this was baseball, she probably would have been manager of the year the past couple of years. I mean, she just did a phenomenal job taking what was a true disaster when Revel, of course, closed. I think we've covered that in past shows. But she, I think last year at this point, or I forget the exact metric, but I think what it is that she turned, basically currently the most recent, maybe it was the second quarter, they had a $25 million operating profit. And the year before, they had something like a $12 million deficit, something along those lines. So, yes. Now, a good part of that is, while, of course, the CEO always takes the blame, like a baseball or manager or football coach, gets the credit for the good times, but, of course, takes the hit for the bad times. But she also had they recruited a lot of Borgata people. middle management and higher echelon types, especially in the realm of player development, which are the people who actually recruit and keep. Their job is to recruit and keep higher end players, the high rollers in the vernacular. And recently, over the past year or so, and there was actually a lawsuit where Borgata tried to stop that at one point.
No, I saw that, including because they were trying to take their Rolodexes with them and their contact information with them.
It's, which is kind of specious in that business, because that's the name of the game, and that's as old as the industry itself.
Sure.
That, you know, you're a host, the casino host. Are the ones who sort of are the boots on the ground when it comes to the high rollers, and, you know, making sure they have whatever they need and getting their tickets to the shows and, you know, their comp dinners, whatever it is that they want. And hosts constantly get new jobs and take their customers with them. So, but MGM plays hardball. You know, they're a behemoth in the gaming industry, and certainly they were unhappy because Ocean, given its physical property, and then you add that to the fact that you have all these people taking Borgata customers. I mean, that Ocean is they're gunning for Borgata. Borgata has been the gold standard pretty much since it opened in July of 2003. And now Ocean is really making a strong play for that. So, of course, MGM, which, again, now owns Borgata 100%, is going to try to stop that. But, yeah, that's just the way the game's played. And but she did, you know, she's very savvy, and probably most important of all, especially to the hedge fund that owns it, she was able to cut a lot of costs while still maintaining and even making the property better than it ever was, which is it's a pretty considerable feat.
Now, we are seeing a lot of action. Obviously, the summer's always big in Atlantic City, even when it was at a nadir. Now that summer's sort of coming, has come to an end, and we're in the middle of fall, have things slowed down in Atlantic City at all? Are we seeing?
It's relative. As you just said, of course, summer is really where the money is made. It's sort of like summer is the Black Friday of the Atlantic City casino realm. That's if you're not making coin, you know, then the rest of the year is not going to be particularly bright for you, generally speaking. So it's not fair to compare October to July. I mean, that just is not a legitimate measuring stick. And of course, the way the industry does it is year to year by month. So If a casino is successful this year, it's because and the numbers I didn't see them, but they should be out any day now, maybe even today, this morning, the September numbers, and that's how you tell. But Atlantic City, and certainly, of course, last year there was virtually no business, so the numbers should be pretty good across the board. But but the question is it doing better than it did in the summer, but are people still coming and losing? And the answer probably, I think, we'll find overall will be yes. I mean, some casinos, as always, some casinos will be down, but some will still, you know, be better, have a better record than it did.
What's happening in Atlantic City this weekend? What are the highlights for anyone that's in the area or thinking about making a trip down there?
Well, I think for anyone who is a pop music fan of any stripe, the big show this weekend is Brian Wilson, of, you know, the guiding genius of the Beach Boys, the Mozart of rock music, if you will, as he's been known for years. He is performing a program of his Beach Boys signatures at Hard Rock this weekend.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's a pretty special show. I'm not a real big Beach Boys fan, especially not as they're constructed these days. But to get, to, you know, I think anybody who has the ability to see Brian Wilson, and of course the guy is, you know, well into his 70s at this point, and actually I guess he's probably pushing 80. To see him, not only to see him in person, but to see him doing the music that he is so beloved and revered for, that's a no-brainer. And also he'll be joined by an original Beach Boy member, the only non-family member of the original band, and that's Al Jardine, and also a guy named Blondie Chaplin Chapin, rather, is a Chaplin, who, no, Chaplin, I'm sorry, Chaplin, Harry, not Harry Chapin. Glennie Chaplin, he has toured with the Beach Boys and performed with them for decades now. So I think that's a pretty special show. And, of course, the biggest crooner, of probably most popular sort of crooner of our time right now is Michael Bublé. Mm. And he is at Boardwalk Hall, and I would certainly recommend seeing Michael Bublé. He's a wonderful entertainer. Unfortunately, I cannot give a wholehearted endorsement of Boardwalk Hall as a venue.
How come?
Acoustically, I mean, clearly, because it's almost 100, it's 90-plus years old, 93, 92 years old, something like that. It was not built with acoustics in mind, and it is kind of an acoustic nightmare. It is one of my least favorite concert venues. I mean, I've seen some major shows, Springsteen, Barbra Streisand, Neil Diamond, The Police, but not a great place, especially for someone like Bublé, who's kind of a more intimate performer. But if you're a Bublé fan, go for it, because he always puts on a really good show. He's a great entertainer. And I don't know if, you know, what your beliefs are about the afterlife and so on, but there are those who do believe in mediums, although I wonder if in this case the word media applies as for plural. And Tyler Henry, who bills himself as the Hollywood medium, as opposed to me, the Atlantic City large.
I'm the Staten Island extra large. Don't feel bad, Chuck.
But he's at Borgata. It's interesting. I'm not going to get into one way or the other, but whether it's a trick or whether it's legitimate, it is a pretty interesting phenomenon.
Have you seen this show, Tyler Henry, the Hollywood medium?
Not him. No, I've seen other mediums, but not his. I think I've probably seen him on TV, but apparently he's sort of the guy these days in that line of work, you know, in that genre of or substrate of show business. So, and it said, however he does it, whether it's just a trick, and there are skeptics who say, well, the questions that are asked are kind of general, and the you can learn to sort of pick up the clues from the subject and the person you're talking to, and others, hey, believe it 100%. But it's apparently, because it's not his first time there, and he's been on TV, so I guess it's still a pretty entertaining program for those, you know, looking for something different.
Absolutely. No shortage of activity this weekend. I'm going to be down there this weekend, Chuck. Hopefully, if you're around, our paths will cross.
Yes, I'm going to try to make that effort. And I certainly hope we can make that happen.
Well, that's phenomenal. Chuck Darrow, read him regularly in bettorsinsider.com. Every Friday. What do we? Can you give us a preview of what you're going to be writing about this week?
Yes. Next week, the 22nd, if I'm not mistaken, Friday the 22nd, there is a group called Postmodern Jukebox coming to Borgata that is a really interesting concept, musical concept. They take contemporary songs as contemporary as Driver's License, which was a big hit over several months back by the 16-year-old TikTok, I guess he was a TikTok or a YouTube sensation, whose name again escapes me. 18 functioning brain cells, you know, at this point, this is what you get.
Well, at 3:46 in the morning, you're doing okay.
Yeah, thank you. But anyway, and then they do like Sweet Child. They've done like Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses, and for instance, they have done I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2 as a gospel tune. And essentially, what they do is they take these more contemporary tunes and they render them in the style of Dixieland or 20s jazz gospel. Sort of Sinatra-esque or Tony Bennett saloon song. I think Sweet Child of Mine is the song they did. No, it's not Sweet Child of Mine, but they do in this kind of a saloon song format with traditional instruments, not a lot of like synthesizers going on here. And that'll be the subject of this week's column tomorrow, Friday. And also, just as a heads up, next weekend, next Saturday, I believe, or I'm sorry, 2 weeks on the 30th. Yeah, Saturday the 30th. A number of cast members of The Sopranos will be at Borgata answering questions, talking about the show.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So on Friday the 29th, if anyone can remember, wants to remember it, I will have an interview with Michael Imperioli, or as we know and love him, Christopher.
You know, I tell you, I listened to his Talking Sopranos podcast. Yeah. It's terrific. It's really terrific.
If you're a fan, I mean, it's here's a little scoop for you guys out there in the radio land, that if you do listen, and he told me this the other day, that because the format of that podcast is episode by episode, and they're coming to the end of the run, so that podcast will be ending.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, they, I'm enjoying it, and it's one of those things, like the actual show, they shouldn't keep it on beyond its shelf life, I think.
And
so.
That's what he said. You know, he said it's there's nothing more they can do. And that was the premise, him and Steve Sciarippa, of course, played Bobby Bacala. That was the stated premise was we're going to do each episode of this podcast. We are going to, in chronological order, first to last, we'll talk about our memories of the show. And,
right. No, they give all sorts. They have all sorts of great insight and analysis. It's a lot of fun.
He's a real bright guy too, Imperioli. Very, very articulate and clearly very intelligent and interesting. He's also I don't want to give away too much, but one of the things that we talked about was the resurrection of his rock band.
Yeah, I've heard him talk about that a little bit. I haven't heard them, but I'd be interested to know how they actually are.
They're sort of a post-punk band, kind of guitar-driven, a little noisy, the way he described the band. So, we'll see. But they're actually going to be playing in the New York, North Jersey area.
Hmm.
So.
Well, it would definitely. Maybe I'll invite Michael back on the radio to talk about that. Chuck, it is always a treat to talk with you, my friend. Hopefully, I'll see you this weekend.
Yeah, that's great, Frank. And as always, I'm just so flattered that you know you keep asking me back on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I really love hearing myself talk.
Hey, you and me both, my friend. All right, we'll talk soon.
Great week, the end of the week.
Chuck Darrow, if you want to comment on any portion of our discussion or anything happening in Atlantic City in general, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
A beauty queen, she made it right, it caused a scene in the town.
Her long blonde hair hanging down around her knees, all the cats are doing striptease, praying for a little breeze.
Her Peter and Gordon, one of my favorites. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. As I mentioned to Chuck Darrow there, I will be in Atlantic City this weekend. And this will be the last shared trip that Rachel and I have before our baby's born. Then we'll have to stay pretty close to home. So if you happen to be around this weekend, one of the things that I made Rachel do on not our last trip, but the previous trip was we had such a packed itinerary that we really didn't relax at all. We basically just went from one event to another and drove her crazy. And it was not really restful for me either. So what we decided is we're not going to have much of an agenda this weekend, but if you're around and you want to meet us for a drink, we're inviting everybody to meet us for a drink and pay for yourself on Saturday at 5 p.m. at the View, which VUE, which is on top of the Claridge in Atlantic City, Saturday at 5 p.m. So we're going to be there 5 to 7 on Saturday. So if anybody's around, feel free to come by and say hello. And, you know, because the weather looks a little iffy, but that's a place that has a great outdoor area if it ends up being nice weather. But if it ends up being not so nice weather, then they have a pretty good indoor area as well. So that's where we're going to be from 5 to 7, and the rest of our schedule is sort of indeterminate. 800-848-9222. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Hanging in there, Carol. Thanks.
Oh, and how is Rachel? I'm sure she's fine, right?
Yeah, she's fine, Carol. Thanks.
Good. You know, I was calling you about Halloween because we used to have a pageant when I was in middle school, and you're going to laugh about this. We used to be able to go up on stage and perform. And I dressed up. This was after the Mets had won in the World Series. And I dressed up as Tom Seaver, and my friend dressed up as a generic Met, and we went up on stage. We sang You've Got to Have Heart.
Oh, that's fun. Like from Damn Yankees.
Yeah.
That's great.
You gotta have heart.
Sing it, Carol. Love it. Very
yeah,
good. Well, right. I didn't know Tom Seaver could sing so well.
Well, I don't know. I sing that well, not Tom Seaver.
Well, I mean, you were masquerading as Tom Seaver. Same here. Same here. I was a big fan of Tom Terrific. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-WABC. Bob is in Long Beach. Hello, Bob.
Yes, Frank. Hello?
Yes.
Frank, oh, yeah, here I am. Okay, here we go. Did you know that Thomas Jefferson was the first president to ever declare war?
Yeah, actually, Brian Kilmeade, my colleague at 10 a.m., actually wrote a book about it.
Yeah, I know. Thomas Jefferson, the Barbary Pirate. I read it. But the thing is, his famous saying was, millions for defense, one cent for tribute.
Right.
And he really, we got respect. But another thing, wasn't Justice Scalia married? I know she was widowed.
Yes, he was married, yes. He had, I think, 7 children, maybe even 9 children.
Well, I guess the families went away together. They were friends of families, right?
You know, again, I'll have to check with my friend Arthur Idala. I can't speak to their vacationing habits, but I know that, you know, there's a great photo of the two of them on an elephant together. So, you know, they did go. Yeah, he had 9 children. 9 children.
Wow. I think you look good and have fun. I respected her, though. You know, she was excellent when she was, before, she really earned being a Supreme Court justice. You know what I mean? She was great.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. I can't disagree with you there, Bob. Thank you for the call. And it's funny, just on that note, President Clinton asked Justice Scalia, who would you rather serve with on the Supreme Court? Because he had an opportunity to appoint somebody. Lawrence Tribe or Mario Cuomo? Because he was considering both of them. And Scalia's response was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And sure enough, that's who he ended up getting an opportunity to serve with. 800-848-9222. Eddie is in New Haven. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, I love your bumper music. It's been great.
All right. Well, thank you.
Now, Katie Kirk, right, she had the courage to go on the Today Show live and get a colonoscopy. Right? Remember that?
I don't, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, they stuck the probe in her ass instead of her mouth. Right?
All right. Is that a joke, Eddie? I'm a little...
Your station's a bunch of...
All right. Well, let's make sure we dump that. You got to love, you know, that kind of person who's so hate-filled that not only, first, he made a joke, which was not funny and took a second for me to get, but that's okay. That I make jokes all the time that people don't get. Second, that he's so motivated by anger that I'm not going to repeat everything that he said because a lot of it is prohibited by the FCC. But he said essentially your station is a bunch of Jew boys that and then did, you know, whatever else. How filled with hatred must someone be that they feel the need to call a radio station, probably drunk or on his sixth whippet by now, and tell people that not all, and I just don't get what he would perceive as being satisfaction in that kind of a call. Would he want me, the ostensibly, even though I'm not Jewish, one of the Jew boys he's referring to know that he disapproves of the kind of content that we're producing? I mean, he's just really people like that are, you know, it's funny. My friend Joe Borelli, when he and I were campaigning one day, Joe said, I wish I could reject that guy's vote. I wish I could have that guy not listen to this show. All right. We'll talk about something fun when we come back. And what's more fun than Kim Kardashian? This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, your influence counts. So use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know, I don't routinely watch Saturday Night Live, not because I have a problem with the political bias or anything like that. It's just because most of the episodes I've seen these last few years, I just don't find funny. A lot of the sketches I don't find funny. And I was always a huge Saturday Night Live fan. All the different casts and a lot of the older episodes, even the seasons that no one liked, I still soldiered on. I still like them. But what I found the last few years is that they almost put doing political commentary ahead of being entertaining. So I never really, I didn't find the show funny. And again, I have no problem laughing at any political person or any non-political person. I just didn't find the show funny. But sometimes there'll be a host or a sketch or something that will pique my interest. For instance, when Elon Musk hosted last year, I watched his opening. I thought it was great, and it did very well ratings-wise. And especially as a non-performer, a non-comedian, non-actor, I thought he did very well. Not last weekend, but the previous weekend, I wanted to stay up and see a little bit of the season premiere, and I saw the tribute that they did to Norm Macdonald, which I thought was really great. Now, this past Saturday, Kim Kardashian was hosting, and I happen to really like Kim Kardashian. I think she does a lot of great things to get people out of prison. I don't like what I heard behind the scenes about her being a kind of throwing a wet blanket over Kanye West's presidential candidacy. But you never know what goes on in someone's marriage, so I'm not going to judge, you know, what goes on. But I'm a fan of Kim Kardashian and her work. She also has psoriasis, like I do, and has done a lot of great advocacy for psoriasis, which I certainly appreciate. So I wanted to see at least a little bit of her performance on Saturday Night Live last Saturday. But by the time my wife and I got home, it was around 10:30, and my wife was tired, and she was going to go to bed. And I figured, why don't I go to bed with her? Because she had complained the previous weekend how the only two nights that we have an opportunity to go to bed together, Friday and Saturday, I didn't go to bed with her the previous two the days. I stayed up. So I said, all right, let me be a good husband and go to bed with her. So that's what I did. Then, so I didn't get to see any of Saturday Night Live on Saturday. Now, I try not to, I like to watch these shows live. I have so many great memories of staying up late on a Saturday and watching Saturday Night Live at 11:30. To me, to watch it the next day is I don't know, it just doesn't feel like Saturday Night Live. But my curiosity got the best of me when I learned that yesterday that some of the jokes that Kim Kardashian made in her opening monologue have become pretty controversial. So I, because curiosity got the best of me, I watched Kim Kardashian's opening monologue last night, right before the show, and I thought it was very funny, I must say. I thought it was great, and she had a lot of like great, clever jokes like this one.
But the one thing I'm really proud of is that no one could ever call me a gold digger. Honestly, I'm not even sure how you become one. So I asked my mom's boyfriend, Corey.
So I thought that was pretty funny, and it gives you a sense that the kind of thing that she was talking about and joking about. But she made one joke that got a lot of attention, and it was this one.
I'm very lucky in life, and I know that I'm privileged, which is why I try to give back as much as I can. A real passion of mine is getting wrongly accused people out of jail. And thanks. In my father's footsteps. Now, you know, my father was and still is such an influence and inspiration to me, and I credit him with really opening up my eyes to racial injustice. It's because of him that I met my first black person. Want to take a stab in the dark at who it was? I know it's sort of weird to remember the first black person you met, but OJ does leave a mark. Or several. Or none at all. I still don't know.
Now, that's funny. That's funny. Now, Kim Kardashian, the only reason anybody knows the Kardashian name is because her father, Robert Kardashian, was OJ's best friend and his pseudo lawyer. He wasn't really a lawyer. He was a lawyer, but he didn't really practice criminal law. And then he kind of got his law license reactivated just so he could work on OJ's defense team. And that joke is going over like a lead balloon. And the family of Nicole Brown Simpson, who was murdered and who OJ went on trial for murdering, they are not at all pleased. But they're not the only ones. So a lot of listeners are taking her apart on Twitter and elsewhere, and they are not at all pleased. Many of these outraged viewers were left wondering how the jokes would be received by both Nicole's family and by her and Simpson's children, who were just 8 and 5 when she died. So you have a lot of the that whole thing. So now Nicole's family is addressing these jokes with her sister, Tanya, calling Kim out for the insensitive material. So according to TMZ, Tanya said that Kim's jokes about Simpson were in poor taste and that it was shocking to watch and hear the audience laughing along. Tanya allegedly went on to call the jokes beyond inappropriate and maintained that Kim should have refused to make light of the topic. She insinuated that the SNL writers who have joked about O.J. Simpson on numerous occasions in the past had been behind the jokes. TMZ also claimed that Tanya was left questioning how much the Kardashians really cared about Nicole, considering how close Nicole and Kris Jenner were. So I have to say, so Tanya's comments were quickly met with abundant support from viewers who took to Twitter to express their sympathy for her. I have to say, and I am someone that believes that OJ, if not killed both of these people single-handedly, I think he certainly had a role in their killing. Whether it was just him or whether it was him and another person, I do think that OJ was part of the murdering of these two people. That being said, I don't think Kim Kardashian did anything wrong here by joking around about that, by making jokes about OJ being a murderer. It's once again pointing out that OJ is a murderer. I think in a lot of ways that by ridiculing OJ for being a murderer, it's done for entertainment purposes, but I think in some ways it's actually shining a light on the murderer of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson. I'm curious what you think. 800-848-9222. Do you think she was out of line? I don't. quite frankly. I really don't. And I had a very close friend who was murdered, and I don't know how I'd feel about people making jokes about his murder. In fact, I'm probably pretty sure that I wouldn't like it. But the big difference with him and Nicole Simpson is that the person that murdered my friend was convicted, whereas the person who murdered Nicole Simpson and Ron Brown was Ron Goldman. Ron Brown was the former, was the cabinet secretary that died in that plane crash in Bosnia. So, sorry, I always mix up the two. Ron Goldman. The person that that murdered Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown never got to go to prison for that, whereas my friend's murderer is in prison. So I don't have an issue with it at all. And I think Kim Kardashian did a good job. I thought she was funny. I thought she delivered these jokes well. And I thought it was great that she had no problem poking fun at herself. It was very self-deprecating. And she had no issue making fun of O.J. Simpson is actually her godfather, believe it or not. So I thought that was fine. And with all due respect to Nicole Brown's sister, I don't think it was offensive or hurtful or demeaning of that incident at all. Again, I know it's meant to be entertaining. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. 800-848-9222 if you agree or if you disagree. Someone who has entered the studio who has a fine sense of humor and also a fine sense of style and ethics is Juliet Huddy.
Ethics?
I think you're pretty ethical. Didn't you win an ethical award recently?
An ethical? I won an integrity award.
Yeah, integrity in media or something?
No, it has nothing to do with integrity in media.
Oh, that was your panel at Talkers, was maintaining
yes,
integrity.
Yes, that's right. See, but I would have liked to win an award for that as
yeah.
well.
Well, so, I mean, it was nice. Being on the panel is almost like winning the
pretty much
award. What was your take on that Kim Kardashian joking around about O.J. being a murderer?
I don't understand it. I mean, I don't think she's making light of the murder at all.
Right.
I completely agree with you. She's reinstating what everybody, well, most everybody believes, which is O.J. is a murderer. And let's not forget about that.
Again, you never like to take issue with what a family member is upset about because obviously you like to be respectful. But I think she's way off base on this one.
Yeah, personally. I actually would think that the Simpson family would be like, yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Get him. But
right.
Yeah, again, you're right, though. Who knows what's going on in the mind of somebody
exactly.
who, you know, a loved one of somebody who's been murdered. I certainly think God have not had to experience that.
Exactly. 800-848-9222 if you want to weigh in. It's funny. Mel Brooks, who was obviously Jewish and came of age during World War II, despised Hitler, and he still does. And Mel Brooks decided that one of the best ways that he could get back at Hitler was through humor.
Turn her mic off, please.
And I thought that Mel doing that was very, very spot on in terms of ridiculing this guy and taking this guy, Hitler, who was responsible for some of history's most horrific atrocities, and making him look like a jackass. And to me, that's what Kim Kardashian did. Same principle. So 800-848-9222. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about abusive guardianships with Karen Turk. And we will get into a wide variety of other issues. We're also going to do the $1,000 minute coming up in about 15 minutes. And you can also email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. And if you want to find me on Twitter, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. I want to thank Pete again for call screening for a second day. Pete, how have you found it here these last two days?
Don't hold that button.
It's been fun. It's been it's a nice change of pace from the day shift. The day shift is a little more chaotic, a little more all over the place. We got some chill callers over here.
Do we?
Wow.
Well, that's good. All right. Well, welcome. It's been good having you. Now, you're not with us tomorrow, right?
I am not, unfortunately.
All right. Well, hopefully you've had a good time here. So, all right, 800-848-WABC. I want to thank Daniel for sending me this email. DNA evidence has not unequivocally proven that Thomas Jefferson fathered any of Sally Hemings' progeny. DNA studies have only unequivocally proven that some member of the Jefferson family, which includes Tom, was the culprit. Strong circumstantial evidence suggests that it was Tom's ne'er-do-well brother. I don't believe that for a second. I mean, I think Daniel Hayes should go work on the O.J. Simpson defense team. In fact, maybe not, because those guys did a much better job defending O.J. on the DNA evidence confronting him than Daniel did defending Jefferson not having a relationship with Sally Hemings. So, all right, seven open lines now. If you want to jump on board, now is the time. So we saw John Catsimatidis on the Fox News channel just now, and I'm actually going to ask him to join us right now. He was talking about all these supply chain problems that we're having, and it was really an interesting discussion. I didn't get to hear what he was saying, but I did hear what he was saying on the Cats at Night show last night, and a bunch of interesting issues in interviews last night. But the interesting thing to me was hearing his perspective with respect to all this inflationary pressures that the economy is dealing with right now. So I'm going to see if we can get him to jump on board with us and give his two cents on what's happening. But also interested to get his take on the aftermath of the Columbus Day parade, which we were at together on Monday. Thank you for those of you that wrote in about how much you enjoyed our shared coverage on that. So that was certainly a lot of fun. Coming up, we'll do the $1,000 minute and talk with Karen Turk, as well as, do 15 seconds of fame towards the end of this hour. All right. If you want to, hey, let me tell you what you can do for your own health and for your own energy levels if you haven't done so already. If you go to getthetea.com, you can order some of this terrific product, Life Change Tea, which is a great product. It is completely herbal. It's a powerful herbal proprietary formula that helps give you more energy without caffeine. It also tastes great. There are no fillers, no GMOs, and it's 100% organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is "The tea that makes you go." You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you have not tried it yet, I think you'll really like it. It's a product that I take every day and I really enjoy. And it's something that I can't imagine doing without at this point. So if you haven't tried it yet, go to getthetea.com. And if you go to promo and use the promo code Frank, you will... can you get John on line three, please? He's calling in on line three. Thank you. If you can go to getthetea.com and use the promo code Frank, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank. Now, as I mentioned, we just saw our owner, John Catsimatidis, on the Fox News channel. The fact that he's wearing a tie at 4 o'clock in the morning is something that is not a surprise to me. So he's in a tie 24 hours a day. So we figured we'd try and take advantage of his expertise as well, if the Fox News folks can do it. John, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Surprisingly, I'm up, but... I, like Frank Moreno, I probably need another hour's sleep later on.
I'm going to get my sleep probably around 8 a.m. I don't know when you get your sleep, because I'm hearing you on the radio 24/7 seemingly, and getting emails from you whenever you're not on the radio. John, this supply chain issue is a real problem. I was just going over the stories that Juliet and I were going to do in the 5 a.m. news hour, and President Biden was even forced to address this yesterday because everybody's concerned about it. You're in the grocery business, you're in the oil business, as well as being in the radio business. How significant of a problem is this supply chain issue that everyone's dealing with?
I think it is a significant problem right now. I believe we're at least a month behind the curve.
President Biden should have done this a month ago. There is a zero coordination in between the states and the White House. The White House is doing what they want. Congress is doing what they want. And the state governors, they do whatever they want, and especially Governor Newsom, where the port of Los Angeles has been quasi-shut down. There's been a zillion ships out there waiting to unload. And I don't understand that some of these governors, they want anarchism. They want confusion. Why do they want to do this to the United States of America? Why do they want to do this to our country? I don't understand it, Frank. And what happened, Frank, is when they closed down the first week President Biden was in office, he closed down the Keystone Pipeline. And what happens? The price of oil goes from $40 a barrel to $80 a barrel. What does that mean?
That means
the cost of transportation, the cost of food. Everything's going to go up.
Well, so we've been covering inflation, and I know you don't like the word inflation in general, but we've been covering...
Let's explain it to the consumer. The word inflation, that means the prices are going up. Why are the prices going up? Because President Biden is saying to the... We're only going to tax the corporations. The corporations have a... What's that moment? Oh, crap moment. Oh, my God.
Yeah, don't make me dump you, John. I don't want you to have to pay the FCC fine.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
The prices... Oh, crap. The stuff is... The price... Our costs are going up. The corporations live quarter to quarter. Wall Street, if they earn one penny less next quarter, Wall Street does not forgive them. So what does the CEO do? He raises the prices immediately. When he raises the prices immediately, you call it inflation. I call it, you know what it is? It's a tax on the poor and the middle class. Because when the prices go up, the middle class that has to buy their food, their clothing, the prices go up, up, up. The poor prices go up, up, up. Social Security is going up 5.9%. Does that mean the government is acknowledging that inflation is more than 2%? I mean, it's a joke.
So, John,
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask. In your view, well, you sound pretty energetic. I may have to hand the reins over to you. In your view, is the inflation issue or people needing to pay more for stuff and the supply chain issue caused by the same problem, or are they caused by two separate sets of events?
Well, it's caused the beginning of the problem was the first week. The first week that Joe Biden was in office, he cancels the Keystone Pipeline, cancels our pipeline because pipelines are bad, and authorizes the Russian pipeline. Our supply went from 13.5 million barrels a day under President Trump, $13.5 million a day. America was self-sufficient. We're down to 11.5 million barrels a day. And guess what? We're buying 840,000 barrels a day from the Russians. Putin is laughing all the way to the bank.
Well, at what, $78 a barrel?
840,000 barrels a day. They're selling it to us for $80 a barrel.
It's you laugh to keep from crying. You laugh to keep from crying. John, I know you you always keep us on our toes, and you've been following the show today and a lot of the stories that we've been doing. Let me lightning round get your take on a few of the items we've been touching upon. William Shatner going into space for 11 minutes yesterday. I thought that was pretty exciting. I know you're a space nut like I am. What'd you think?
I loved it. My only disappointment, instead of calling it Blue Dream, they should have called it the Enterprise.
That's exactly right. Katie Couric editing this interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg to omit those comments about people taking a knee during the national anthem. What was your take?
I think it's horrible. Let me tell you something. When ethics goes down to zero with reporters, she should be banned for 5 years at least. I mean, you can't, you know, the days of Walter Cronkite, 92% of the American people believe the reporters. You know how many people believe reporters now?
Nobody.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. And that's something that the right and the left has in common. They're taking down.
Hey, let them believe Frank Morano and John Catsimatidis. You know why? We care about telling the truth.
100%, John. Looks like Monday the mayor's design commission is going to take down Thomas Jefferson's statue and move it out of City Hall. What's your take?
It is horrible. They're trying, Frank, Tony Carbonetti said it on my show yesterday at 5 o'clock. They're trying to create civil war between the common sense people and anarchism. They're trying to say, okay, let's take down Jefferson's statue because of X, Y, Z. You know, he was a terrific president. He bought Louisiana Purchase. He did so many things. So when they take down the Jefferson statue, they are daring the tough Americans to go down and take down Floyd's statue or something. And that's going to create civil war, and that's what they're looking for. They're looking for civil war in America, and who is pushing them? I don't know who's pushing them.
John, it is always a treat to start the morning with you. This is a preview of what people can hear every day at 5 p.m. If they're not usually awake at that time, you can certainly go to WABCradio.com. You can also listen to John and I both on the Cats Roundtable every Sunday morning right here on WABC at 8:30. John, thanks for checking in with us.
Frank, I'm going to go back to sleep.
There you go. There you go. Thank you. Our owner, John Catsimatidis, who is also a prolific businessman in the real estate, oil, and grocery fields. He knows his stuff. All right. Well, if you want to win some of his money, now's the time to queue up for the $1,000 minute. You can call in to 1-800-848-9222. And if you are the seventh caller to 1-800-848-WABC, you'll get an opportunity to answer 10 questions in 60 seconds. And if you can do that, then you'll win $1,000. If you get one incorrect or you let your time run out, you will not win. But you want to give it a shot, now's the time. 800-848-9222. And then coming up, we're going to talk with Karen Turk, author of the book Behind the Headlines, How a Conservative Beauty Queen Became a Target of Fake News and Cancel Culture. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Straight ahead.
77 WABC, where the action is.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
I never been to Spain, but I kinda like the music. See, the ladies are insane there, and they sure know how to use it.
Three Dog Night here on the other side of midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Well, one lucky listener. We've got an opportunity to compete for $1,000 because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents.
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Moreno.
All right, let's meet today's contestant, Pedro, in the Boogie Down Bronx. Now, Pedro, you've never done this before? You've never competed?
Not in the in this particular one.
Okay, all right, good, okay. Well, so you're a regular listener, so you've got to be familiar with the rules of the game, right, Pedro?
Yes, sir.
All right, for anybody listening, the way this works is Pedro is going to have 60 seconds to answer 10 questions. If he gets one wrong, he loses. And if he takes more than 60 seconds, he loses. So you ready to go, Pedro?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. How many inches are in a foot?
12.
Who is the WABC traffic reporter in the morning, Monday through Friday?
Doug, oh my God. I don't know.
All right. I'm sorry, Pedro. That is, unfortunately, that is Joan Nolan. It is Joan Nolan, an integral part of the WABC team. And he's been on the station for longer than anybody. Been on here for about 40 years. I think he started in 1981 with Dan Ingram, and he's actually going to join us tomorrow at this time. So thank you anyway, Pedro. I appreciate you playing the game. And if you didn't get an opportunity to participate, you can give it a try tomorrow. Meantime, gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome once again Karen Turk, author of the new book, Behind Enemy Lines, How a Conservative Beauty Queen Became a Target of Cancel Culture and Fake News. Hello, Karen. Good to talk with you again.
Hey, Frank. How are you? Good to be here.
I'm great. I'm great. All right. Now, the book has gotten a great deal of attention. It's out this week for the first time, right?
It is. It is. It's called Behind the Headlines, and it is out this week, and I couldn't be more excited. We were delayed a little bit in its release, but you know, God has greater timing than I do, because Britney Spears and a lot of the other news has really brought so much attention to this really important issue of guardianship and conservatorship that affected my family. And a lot of my book explains what happened behind the salacious headlines to me. And without those other stories out in the news, I don't know that my book would be so interesting.
Yeah,
so,
no, I would.
You know, I'm very glad.
I would certainly agree. It's worth it just for the cover. This, if people haven't purchased the book yet, I recommend it. It's the cover is a photograph, a lovely photo of Karen. Essentially, it looks like you're naked except for a newspaper and some high heels.
Yeah, and you know, you don't know what's going on behind those headlines either.
Exactly.
So, you know, who knows what's really going on?
Exactly. All right. So you were the winner. You worked behind the scenes as an executive for CBS. Then you won the 2016 Mrs. Florida pageant just as Donald Trump was running for president. You were very supportive of his campaign, all while wearing your sash and crown as Mrs. Florida. Now, if people aren't familiar with the Mrs. Florida pageant, fill us in. Now, is that just basically Miss Florida only for married women?
It's for married women, yeah. It's the older married section of the pageant scene. And I was fortunate enough to meet somebody else who had been a former Mrs. Florida, who convinced me that it was a great idea for me to run, that I would have a great platform to be able to advocate and do charity work. At that time, I was advocating a lot for adopted and foster care children, being an adoptive child myself. Some of it is in the book. And, she said, you'll have the opportunity to, you know, speak to others, to tell your story. And I thought it sounded like a great idea. So I went ahead and I went into the competition, and I had this girl and some others that became my good friends that led for me. And the rest is history. I actually won in 2016, which was a huge honor.
Right. So you and Trump won the same year. Shortly thereafter, people Google your name, Karen Turk, Karen with a Y. You see a barrage of negative headlines. Mrs. Florida stole pennies off her mother's eyes before she died. Fresh off a fundraiser for Roger Stone, who, by the way, wrote the foreword to your book. Fresh off a fundraiser for Roger Stone, Mrs. Florida pleads guilty to Social Security fraud. What's the true story, Karen? What are these headlines missing about this whole, your downfall from beauty queen to misdemeanant?
Yeah, I mean, the real story is that my mother was a victim of a litigious guardianship, as so many people are throughout this country. And until we rip down and change this system entirely, and this is a problem in 38 states in this country, it's really a problem anywhere we have elected judges, you can be in a situation where your fundamental constitutional rights are stripped away, your children have no power, you end up with a stranger caring for you, and all the while, the attorneys who initiate these guardianships make a lot of money in the process. And in my mother's situation, that was really seemed to be the motivation behind this, was strictly to be able to fleece the estate. And in my mother's case, what was interesting about her case in comparison to a lot of other cases that you'll see is my mother didn't have the same financial means as some of these more high-profile cases. A great example is the artist Peter Max, that I know a lot of your listeners may remember. Right. He was an iconic artist.
I've started seeing the ads of Free Peter Max, just like the Free Britney movement. Now, I want to ask you about the Peter Max situation in a second, but just go back to your mother's situation. How did your mother wind up in a position where she was in an abusive guardianship?
I ended up fighting with the nursing home. That's the bottom line. You know, when these nursing homes aren't caring for your parent and you feel that your parent is being abused, I did what I thought any child would do. I stood up against them and said, please, you know, I want my mother off the medication you have her on. You know, we came in, there's bruises on her. There were all these things that had happened. And I began to fight with that nursing home. And unfortunately, I wound up in a situation where that fight turned into them hiring an attorney, and they happened to hire an attorney who does a lot of guardianship. So, of course, that attorney and that law firm initiated a guardianship for my mother and went before a judge that, of course, them being ingrained in my county, they know everybody, went in front of that judge, and that judge's ruling was to strip my mother's rights, take away all the estate planning that she had done, because a POA means nothing in a court of law, nothing. If the lawyers petition to have it overturned and the judge accepts it, the POA is overturned and a stranger becomes your parent's advocate. And in my mother's case, that person was not an advocate for my mom. They didn't stand up against the nursing home, who one of the headlines you won't see is that I did sue that law firm for unlawful death and did settle that lawsuit. Because my mother was abused in a nursing home, and that's what led to my mother ending up in a guardianship, like so many others.
So I can understand that, and I think a lot of our listeners can follow that story, irrespective of their political ideology. And if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Karen Turk, her new book out this week called Behind the Headlines. It's available on Amazon or anywhere else books are available. But how did you find yourself getting arrested just for advocating for your mother? How did that happen?
Because, you know, the louder I got and the more attention I wanted to draw to my mother's story, from where I sit, it seems like the fear of, you know, being exposed for the things they had done wrong was so overwhelming that they wanted to silence me. They wanted to distract from the issue. And, you know, guess what? Being a Trump supporter in 2019 and being friends with Roger Stone and holding fundraisers for him and all the other things that I've done throughout my career made me a great opportunity for them to cancel culture me. So I'm sure to much of their joy, you know, because I was who I was, it was very easy for them to take shots at me in the press and get people to pay attention to the story. So all of a sudden everything got flipped on me and it became a situation where the focus was on me and some imaginary stuff that had been made up in the paper rather than the real focus, which should have been my mother sitting in an abusive nursing home with a stranger as a guardian, with her POA and her rights stripped away from her. And nobody wanted to listen to that story, a story that really is so prevalent. It's human trafficking that's legalized in this country for profit. And then on top of all of that, you have your basic constitutional rights that are stripped. So it's an issue that every single American family needs to be concerned about.
I follow all that. And one thing I need you to, I understand this, but one thing I need you to explain to our listeners is if you didn't do anything wrong, if you didn't commit any crimes, why would you plead guilty to a crime? I think the natural instinct for people is to think if someone's pleading guilty to a crime, then they're guilty. But that wasn't the case for you.
I struggle with this, too. And again, you know, until you're in the shoes of actually dealing with the federal government and being looked at for whatever potential charges it is, and you're facing that moment, it's very difficult to understand the decisions that you have to make. And in my situation, I knew that if I was going to fight the federal government, I was already in a pretty bad position as a Trump supporter. There were already these horrible headlines about me, and it was going to cost my family $500,000. I'd have to go to trial. I potentially, you know, might not win at trial, which I was, you know, sure I would because I was not guilty of the crime that I was accused of. But, you know, all in all, my lawyer said, do you want to do that or do you want to get this over with? And you could just plead to a misdemeanor and this can be over with. And you know what? That was a very pleasing option at that point in my life. You know, I had been through so much, and I hate to even make this about me, because what my mother went through was so much more horrific than anything that I've experienced. And in some ways, I feel blessed that my story did get public attention, because my mother's story deserves to be heard. And I hope your viewers will buy the book and hear what happened to her, because ultimately what happened to me was small in comparison. But yeah, when you're sitting there and you know that it's financially going to break your family, maybe break up your marriage, definitely take an emotional toll on you that you're unprepared for. Yeah, a $17,000 misdemeanor sound like a pretty appealing option in
sure.
that scenario. So I took it.
I can imagine. Now, let's talk about some the issue of abusive guardianships has gotten a great deal of attention lately, in part because of the Britney Spears documentary and then the public fight she had with her father, and then in part because of the film I Care a Lot, which came out last year, which was a terrific film. And now you alluded to the Peter Max situation. Peter Max, a very famous artist, the founder, the father of pop art, the guy that had inspired Andy Warhol. What exactly is happening with Peter Max? What's the story?
His story is so tragic, and it's a New York story. It's a really compelling story. You know, here we have this artist who, you know, has made millions selling his paintings. He, even later on in his years, was a huge collectible on cruise ships and had, you know, really been doing his craft, you know, in a way that even into his older years, he was succeeding. And for an artist to have a long career like that is pretty unheard of. I mean, he really just was a total icon. And his family ended up arguing with each other, which happens so much. You know, I was an only child, which is probably one of the reasons I was prosecuted, because there was no brother or sister or contention. I was fighting a nursing home. When there's already contention in a family, it makes it very easy for these legal predators to come in, these attorneys, and to basically initiate a guardianship. And in Peter's situation, that's what happened. The family had some issues. The brother and the sister had disagreements on how to run, you know, their father's business. And they were, you know, they were arguing. And all of a sudden they came in and they were able to initiate a guardianship. And the judge back in 2016, when Peter Max was put into the guardianship, the judge was extremely specific. And he said, do not keep this man from his children. I am going to lay this on the record. Do not keep this man from his children. And wouldn't you know, here we are so many years later, Peter Max is in the guardianship, and he has been kept from his children. And it's been a situation where his daughter, Libra Max, has been fighting very publicly now to talk about what's happening with her father. And I'm so proud of her for coming forward and talking about this story, because it's yet another story that will get the public's attention and make them realize that this could be your family. I'm no different than anybody else. I planned. My mother had a power of attorney. My mother and father did estate planning. They wanted things a certain way. I was an only child. If I can be stripped of my rights, and my parents can be stripped of their rights, and your parents can be stripped of their rights, and Peter Max can be stripped of their rights, we have to look at the entire system. And on a federal level, we need major change. And
all right, so
a lot of this has spurred federal action.
Let's look at that. Now, first, given the before we get into how to fix the system, given the existing framework, how can someone make sure that they never end up in an abusive guardianship, whether it's they themselves taking this action or a family member or a loved one looking out for them? What preventative action can people take with the laws as they are now?
There's absolutely nothing, and this sounds terrible for this to come out of my mouth, but there's absolutely nothing, because if they want to get you, they will get you. There is no way to prevent this from happening to you right now, and that's why we all have to be involved in this issue, because, again, all of the planning in the world doesn't matter if a judge wants to say, you know what, I'm going to throw out that POA. So starting at the root cause of this issue, this is why this is so important. We have to change the way that that functions. Now, of course, I recommend that everybody go and get an amazing estate plan because, yeah, in most cases, it will prevent this from happening. So you should do your estate planning. But you need to be aware that if a judge wants to strip those rights will be stripped and you will end up a ward of the estate, possibly with a stranger taking care of you. And no stranger is ever going to take care of someone the way a family member does. And on top of that, when you have an abusive system that is completely financially motivated, you're then in a situation where very likely you could be like so many others, Peter Max, Free Britney, and people like my mother, everyday people, who end up in these guardianships where it becomes all about the profit.
So Britney Spears and Peter Max, both of them very famous. And I think a lot of people look and say, oh, if it can happen to them, it really can happen to anybody. What happens if someone listening to us right now is finds themselves in an abusive guardianship? What can they do?
Well, number one, if you're a child, you can't be afraid. You know, read my book, Behind the Headlines. You can't be afraid. You have to keep fighting. We are all in this together. And I would encourage anybody who's in a situation where they have an abusive guardianship right away to contact the organization, the Center for Estate and Administration Reform. The acronym is CEAR. It's the Center for Estate and Administration Reform. They are fighting tooth and nail to change the system, and they get involved every single day in advocacy cases for families that are being wronged in guardianship, and they are definitely the leaders in that right now. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to the show to contact them and make sure that, you know, you are protecting your family member or your friend or anybody else that you suspect may be in an abusive guardianship.
And you mentioned how the system needs reform. And if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Karen Turk. She's the author of the book Behind the Headlines. It's out this week. It's available on Amazon or anywhere else books are sold. What would you do? Let's say Congress, President Biden, or any future president were to ask your take on how to reform this guardianship situation on a federal level. What would you do?
You know, I'm so proud of our legislators that are already there and are already working on this. You know, whether or not I totally agree with some of the things that have been introduced in the latest bill, which is sponsored as a bipartisan bill. It's sponsored by Republican Nancy Mace out of South Carolina and Charlie Crist, a senator. And they are on opposite sides of the aisle. Charlie Crist is a Democrat and Nancy Mace is a Republican. And they came together and wrote a bill. It's called the Free Britney Bill. And it is being introduced in Congress and the Senate. They are looking to get bipartisan support on it. There are some things in this bill that I think need to change. As a matter of fact, it gives grants to states in order to support them in guardianship in the hopes that throwing some money at the problem may make major change. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think it's really important that we have people that are demanding federal action in our Congress and in our Senate. I've met Nancy Mace personally. I told her about my mother's story and this issue about a year and a half ago here in Palm Beach, and I am so proud of her for taking action. Matt Gaetz, who's also a Florida senator, who's been embroiled in a little bit of scandal on his own, a Republican down here, amazing Republican congressman. He has also supported the change in guardianship laws. And I think the more Congress people and senators that we can talk to, the more people that know what's happening, just like listening to your show, you know, just like we talked about, you know, Peter Max is relatable because it could be me or you. We have to remember that congressional representatives and senators work for us. They work for the people. They are there to represent us as constituents. And when constituents are calling for action, they must comply and they must do what's right. So we need to get them involved. We need to break down this entire system and rebuild it from the ground up.
And just to be clear, I know you're a conservative and you believe that that's part of the reason that you were targeted criminally. But the issue of abusive guardianships, as alluded to by the fact that the legislation that you're pushing is bipartisan, the issue of abusive guardianships is a nonpartisan one. This is one that Democrats and Republicans, liberals, conservatives, independents, libertarians, something that everybody really can get on board with trying to reform, right?
Certainly. And in this world, don't we need something that will unify us? Don't we need a common goal? Don't we need something that isn't really going to bring everyday politics into the issue? Mm. This is an issue of parents, of loved ones, of disabled children. Let's not forget, you know, in my mom's case, it's an elderly woman. That's extremely prevalent. You know, most of these cases happen to the elderly. Free Britney's a young woman, you know, and then you also look at, you know, other demographics of people throughout this country. And you've got people who are disabled that maybe for whatever reason are in a position to take care of themselves. And they are just as vulnerable as elderly citizens and celebrities. We are all in the same boat together. So isn't it great that this is an issue that can unify us, that we can all get behind and we can say, yes, I have people that I love in my life. And I don't want to see them stripped of their civil rights and put into a guardianship where I can't care for them, I can't fight for them, and I can't advocate for them. And we have to go behind those headlines, whether it's behind the headlines in my own case to hear my mother's story, or behind the headlines in Peter Max's or Brittany's case, and pull that apart and really look at what's happening. And at the end of the day, the root cause of the issue isn't even the guardians. The root cause of the issue is a legal predatory system that thrives on the almighty dollar. And until that is changed, we're going to continue to have the same problem.
Well, Karen, appreciate the time this morning. It's always a treat to talk with you. And good luck with the book. Hope everybody checks out the book Behind the Headlines. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you. Me too. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Karen Turk, Behind the Headlines is the book. We'll do 15 seconds of fame next. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, now's the time. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Well, if you've ever dreamt of being famous and fortunate, now is your time. All you have to do if you'd like to be heard for 15 seconds is give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Two lines open right now. It's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Steve is in Manhattan. Hello, Steve.
It's about who we are. It's about what we believe and what we stand for as Americans. There's a culture war going on in this country. Patrick J. Buchanan, circa 1992. And your last guest, good luck dealing with the lefties in Congress. Go, Buchanan, go. Go, Buchanan, go.
Russell is in White Plains. Hello.
Not only did Jefferson rape the half-sister of his wife, who was a product of rape, he kept his own children in slavery. And without the Haitian Revolution, we would never have gotten the Louisiana Purchase. He presided over and benefited from the Haitian efforts.
Raji in Manhattan. Sorry, too much static. Christopher in New London.
Hey, is your kid going to be autistic or retarded?
You still got 7 more seconds, Christopher. All right. Well, let's make sure we dump that. Neil in Staten Island, hello. See, the things you get to hear on hold, Neil, am I right?
Happy 246th birthday to the United States Navy. God bless every single one of them.
Thank you. I was remiss in not mentioning that earlier. That's true. 800-848-9222. Gordon in Canada.
Hi, Frank. I actually met Charles Crist. I thought he was a nice guy. His office was next to mine in St. Petersburg. I didn't know he was a senator.
He's actually a congressman. She misspoke. Mike is in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. Removing the Thomas Jefferson statue, it seems that common sense is not common anymore.
Unfortunately, that is certainly the case. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Michael is in the city. Hello, Michael.
Yes, I'm hungry. I want to order a sandwich. I'd like an orange counterpoint with foam without the cracks and a little bit of tomato. But don't you put mayonnaise on like you did last time.
All right. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere, folks. I just don't know where. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to... actually, why don't we end it there? The static is a little wearying, to be honest. We'll slam the lid on this portion of 15 Seconds of Fame. Hopefully, we'll have the phones fixed by tomorrow. Coming up on the WABC Early News with Juliet, you'll not only get to hear Juliet and I bring you the news on everything from William Shatner going to space to fires in California, but a whole bunch of other stuff. Matt Sapienza's got sports, and Deb Valentine has all your latest local news, and Sid Rosenberg will also join us to give us a preview of what's coming up on the Bernie and Sid show. Should be an action-packed edition of the Bernie and Sid show. I know on Thursdays they have on Bill O'Reilly, but a lot of news coming your way. If you didn't get an opportunity to be heard today or you listen on the podcast, you can certainly email me with your thoughts at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. I'm on Twitter as well, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Tomorrow is going to be our Friday show, so we're going to have Ask Frank Anything. So if you want to start lining up your questions in the first hour, you can ask me any question on anything. We've gotten some very creative questions the last few weeks, so hopefully that continues as well. We have a few other fun items tomorrow that we're going to explore, including some other follow-up on this space stuff, because it's going to be very interesting. You're going to hear one member of the British royal family not happy with all these billionaire space flights. So you'll hear about that next hour, and we're going to get into that a bit more tomorrow as well. Now, I'm sympathetic to a lot of the issues that people are raising, but I think it's great that the private sector is stepping up and doing these recreational space flights. I wish we would have seen this a long time ago, and I think it's great that it's happening. All right. That slams the lid on things for today, at least this portion of the show. But don't go anywhere, because there's a whole lot of news, and you're going to hear it first with us, and then you're going to be hearing about it for the rest of the day. So if you want to be informed on your way to the water cooler today, then be sure to listen to us on the WABC Early News. Juliet Huddy, Deb Valentine, Matt Sapienza, Joe Nolan, Sid Rosenberg, and me, to be continued.